To Win, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Jesse Russell. The National Labor Relations Board will hear a case today concerning Walmart auto shop workers who have expressed interest in forming a union. 9 of 17 workers at the Walmart Supercenter Tire and Lube Express in Loveland, Colorado, submitted cards to the board. The attempt at organizing a small part of the store indicates a new strategy by the United Food and Commercial Workers in getting through the anti-union barricade of the world's largest retail chain. The union insists that the auto shop is separate from the rest of the store and can therefore organize. When meat cutters at a Walmart store in Texas won union certification in 2000, the company reacted by closing all of its meat cutting departments countrywide. The only officially unionized Walmart is in Quebec, a store that the chain has since threatened to close. In addition, the store recently bowed to pressure in China to allow the Communist Party-sponsored union into stores in that country.
Picket lines continue in Hannibal, Ohio, despite 17 arrests as aluminum manufacturer Ormet files for bankruptcy. The company is seeking to void labor contracts held by the United Steelworkers of America.
Right now we're in a fight for health care and pensions. You know, it's going on across the country. Every company you hear, you know, they want them to pay for their health care. They want them to pay, lose their pensions. They're trying to take our pensions and health care from our retirees.
Jeremy Parker is the vice president of Ohio USWA Local 5724, representing half of the 1,300 union workers at the Ormet Reduction Plant and Rolling Mill.
Now, this is a fight that's not only going on right here at Ormet. It's nationwide. Every time you open paper, somebody's taking a pension. You know, we're just standing up to them and saying, listen, if you don't want to pay us what we've worked and what our retirees have worked their lifetime for, then there's not going to be an Ormet. You know, I'd rather see that place turn back to cornfields than to live under them conditions.
Working without a contract since August 30th, Ormet employees decided to conduct a work stoppage on November 22nd. The union is waiting to hear from a bankruptcy court judge on plans for reorganization.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. If you're offered the option of working the night shift, you may want to think twice about taking it unless you're married. More than 99 million Americans work the night shift, and a recent study finds that married workers handle it better both emotionally and psychologically. Mark Nagy, head of industrial and organizational psychology at Xavier University in Cincinnati, says that night hours help parents handle things like childcare more efficiently. Single night shift workers tend to feel left out of the mainstream.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Who was one of the biggest winners on November 2nd? Some bloke named Jerry Jones. He ran a $5 million ad blitz in Arlington, Texas to win a vote that will put $325 million of government money into his own pocket. Jerry's the billionaire owner of the Dallas Cowboys, and the vote was to get taxpayers to build a luxury sports palace for his private business. He's just one of the billionaire sports owners across America who profess to love free enterprise, but shamelessly wallow in corporate welfare. Local politicians, eager to please these moneyed power brokers, back their billionaire boondoggles, even as basic needs in their cities go begging. Take New York City, where both Mayor Michael Bloomberg and Governor George Pataki have rushed to the aid of Robert Wood Johnson IV, known as Woody to his pals and political cronies. Woody is the heir to the Johnson & Johnson fortune, a backer of various far-right-wing causes, one of the top Republican donors in the country, and owner of the New York Jets. It's in this latter capacity that Woody, a fervent free enterpriser, wants a government handout. He says his team must have a new stadium to play in, and both Bloomberg and Pataki are there for him. They're offering $600 million from New York taxpayers to build poor Woody a privileged for-profit playground on a stretch of Manhattan's most valuable land. These are the same two political leaders who keep shortchanging New York school kids, claiming there's just no money to meet their needs. 94% of the city's schools have no athletic fields, and more than half have no playgrounds for the kids. Forget playgrounds. The kids' schools are dangerously dilapidated. Parents and teachers have to chip in to buy the most basic classroom supplies, and some school bathrooms don't even have toilet paper. This is Jim Hightower saying, here's a modest proposal. Not another dime in welfare for billionaires until every school is fully stocked with toilet paper.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-947-AUTO.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works. Fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works. Not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello. Relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec? Nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, happy Thursday. Yes, it is finally Thursday. Those of you who were listening to the second hour of the program yesterday will recall I thought yesterday was Thursday. I don't know what it is. Maybe it was the Thanksgiving holiday or the fact that I worked all weekend. I just don't know. Anyhow, here it is, Thursday. Welcome to our program. We're going to have an electile dysfunction alert today, keeping you up to date on what's going on with our election process. We've got a JAWS alert, an environmental alert. We've got lots of interesting things today, some interesting news. Mercury is retrograde, by the way. That happened, what, 2 days ago? 3 days ago? I think, yeah, 3 days ago, yeah. And lasts until December 20th, for those of you who follow such things. I do not claim to be knowledgeable about astrology. The limit of my knowledge of the whole thing, frankly, is two things. One, when I was a teenager, I had a girlfriend who was very into it, and she bet me something that more than a statistically significant percentage, greater than 50% of my friends would be clustered in six signs, in five signs. And those were the water and earth signs. Because I'm a Taurus, which is an earth sign. And I thought, that's nonsense. You know, scientifically, it's completely unprovable. It makes no sense whatsoever. And I set off to prove her wrong. And, in fact, about 80% of the people that I was good friends with were one of these five signs, which was just startling to me. I don't know what it means, but it was startling to me. And then I have one of my publishers
actually very often doesn't even answer the phone when Mercury's retrograde. And I've run across, there's this whole subculture of people out there in business who don't do business when Mercury's retrograde. And my horoscope in the newspaper today said, don't speak in public today. So here I am. Maybe I shouldn't be speaking about astrology. Maybe that was it. Anyhow, last night, Louise and I went to a Democracy for America meetup. It was the first one that we've been to, I have to admit. We have been just, you know, flat out busy through this election period, and they have intended to go to a bunch of them. They come around every month. It's the first Wednesday, I believe, of every month. And they were happening all over the country last night. And I got the notice in the mail a couple days ago, and because I had signed up, I don't know, 6 months ago or so, and said, you know, let's check this thing out. And so we went over to Burlington, which is about 50 miles from where we live, Burlington, Vermont, which is San Francisco East Coast. Burlington is where the University of Vermont is, and it's right on Lake Champlain. It's an absolutely breathtakingly beautiful city. And looks out, it's got a huge hill, you know, that slides down into the city and then looks out over this lake on the other side of which, in the far distance, you can see the mountains of northern New York State. And we went to this meetup expecting to just, you know, hang out with a few folks. And that's what most of the folks who were there were expecting. It was, let's get together. I'm guessing there were probably 60 people there, maybe 70. And it turns out there were folks from all over Vermont. There were half a dozen people from here in Montpelier, so I think they're going to start putting one together for the town that we live in. But what's interesting, the meeting's just about to start, and Howard Dean walks in wearing an old sweatshirt, a pair of jeans. And so they haul him up to the front of the room, and he talks for about 10 or 15 minutes. He talked about how he has become a convert to instant runoff voting. He said, you know, here in Vermont, he hadn't had any experience with it as governor. He knew what it was, and in theory, it sounded good. But during the election, he actually had an opportunity to observe it and work in San Francisco, where it is the law of the land in that city. And they have instant runoff voting. And what I thought was particularly interesting was his observation on this. He was asked a question from the audience. There was a person in the audience who said, Governor Dean, we have seen that the Republican strategy now is go negative early, redefine your opponent in the most negative and pathetic and awful and horrible terms possible, and then, you know, carry on the argument, the debate, which certainly is what was done to Kerry this year, suggesting that he had self-inflicted war wounds and all these things that later turned out to be not just lies, but provable lies. But they did their damage. And so anyhow, this guy says, how do we deal, we who want to be politically active, how do we work in a political environment where we don't want to become what we are opposing? And this is a really important question. I actually, last weekend, sat down to write an op-ed piece for Common Dreams about this. And I've gone through two drafts on it, and it's still not quite where I want it to be. But because this is, I remember a couple of years back, this was almost 10 years ago, I was writing The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. It would have been 95, 96. And Louise and I flew out to California, to Davis, California, the University of California, Davis, and spent an afternoon with Professor Jack Forbes. Jack Forbes has a website you can find very easily. Just plug Jack Forbes into Google. And he's a professor of Native American Studies at UC Davis and a Native American himself of considerable stature, I guess you would say, recognition, well-known. He's taught Native American studies all over the world. He's an unrelenting advocate for Native American positions in the United States. He wrote a book, which is what propelled me out to California to meet with him, that really turned my worldview on its side when I first read it. It was called Columbus and Other Cannibals. And he's the one who introduced me to the term Wetiko, which is a word, a Native American word, that means cannibal, literally, which is the word that many of Mr. Forbes or Professor Forbes' ancestors used to refer to Europeans, not because they ate the flesh of the Native Americans, but because they ate their life, their lives. They took their lands, they took their food, they banned their religions, they tried to ban their language. And this was seen as eating. So anyhow, Forbes pointed out to me that the Native Americans were confronted basically with very few options when Europeans came over. Before that, there were a few exceptions. There were a few warlike tribes, and they were usually the result of climate change. The horrible winter of the 1600s, and there was another climate shift, I guess, back around the 1200s. These were well documented in Europe. The Greenland colony had died off in one of these. These drove, in a couple of cases, Athabascan-speaking people, mostly what are now the Dene people of Canada, south, looking for food, and produced local warfare. And so there were a few tribes in North America, in the United States parts of North America, that were the, sort of what you might call warlike, because they were invading other tribes' territory. The Navajo, the Apache, were relatively recent visitors. They've only been in the southern part of North America for 600-700 years, maybe 800 years, whereas the Hopi people, the Pueblo-speaking people, had been there for 6,000-10,000 years before then. And similarly, there was a couple of tribes in the northeast. I believe the Mohawks were one of them. In any case, by and large, Indian warfare was something that pretty much just didn't happen, or at least it didn't happen as genocidal warfare. The game lacrosse was a game that was played as a form of dispute settlement among Native Americans in the Northeast. And this is how they would settle, you know, territorial disputes or whatever. But by and large, Native Americans didn't want other people's land, and they didn't want to kill off other people. And there were good reasons for this. They didn't want to kill off other people because they needed them to trade with. They needed them to exchange sons or daughters with from time to time to keep the gene pool fresh. And they didn't want their land because they didn't want to deal with the ghosts and the holy places and the power places of another tribe, of another community. They had their own. So, you know, pretty much warfare. In fact, counting coup, my old friend Ari Mayan, who is a Native American, and whose great-great-grandfather was a pretty famous chief, and Ari has this war bonnet with all these eagle feathers in it from his great-great-grandfather, or maybe it's three or four greats. And he said each feather was acquired by counting coup, C-O-U-P, coup. And the way that you would count coup is you would touch the enemy in a way that drew a little bit of blood. In other words, you touch them with a knife or a spear point or something so that they bleed. And at that point, they're out of the game. They leave. Now, it might have been because back then, you know, if a cut got infected, you could die. Although, frankly, I doubt it. The point that Ari told me about when he told me about this was that the goal of warfare was to demonstrate who was stronger or who was winning, not to kill the other group. So anyhow, Jack Forbes says when the Native Americans were first confronted by us, or by Europeans, they had very few options. One was to run, which some of them did. Another was to stay in place and die, which many of them did. A third was to try to awaken the invaders and cause them to change their ways, which many did. Seneca was probably the most famous for this, and they ultimately failed and died. And the fourth, which was the most tragic of all in Forbes's mind, was to become like the invaders. And he said, many of my brothers and sisters, many of my tribe, many of my community of Native Americans, he said, became infected with Wetiko. So anyhow, at this Democracy for America meeting last night, and democracyforamerica.com is their website, this guy asked Howard Dean, how do we avoid becoming our enemy? You know, the Republicans are like, go negative, go early, trash your opponent, take them apart, destroy them. How do we compete in that arena without becoming like that? Because it's not the way that we want to be. The same challenge that the Native Americans faced. And Dean said, the answer to that is instant runoff voting. He said, we need to work for instant runoff voting. And I'd never thought about this. And apparently he hadn't before he saw San Francisco. He said, with IRV, with instant runoff voting, you always have an incentive to go positive because you want to try and get as many votes as you can for your position, first of all, and then more broadly for your side, because even if you don't win, your side might win. And so there's this whole, you know, there's just a, it creates a whole paradigm where positive voting, pushing your point of view, is much more effective than negative campaigning. In fact, negative campaigning can actually harm you in an instant runoff voting environment, as they have in Australia, for example. And I just thought that was marvelous. So anyhow, Howard Dean spoke for about a half hour. Then Bernie Sanders showed up, and he talked for about a half hour. He turned the thing into a town hall meeting. It was wild. It was absolutely wild. So I'm going back. I'm impressed. And I encourage you to check these things out, democracyforamerica.com. Screenings at airports. Are men getting groped at airports, too? We'll tell you about that right after this. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Economics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Economics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Len. How can I help you?
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channel? Satellite?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Whatever you want, whatever you need, I will be right here waiting. Baby, 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 whatever you want.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Broadcasting live from coast to coast on radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system. Streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, archives at whiterosesociety.org, tomhartman.com will get you into our live chat room hosted by the Democratic Forum on CompuServe, and to our archives of specific programs, specific topics. I think I mentioned a few weeks ago, the last time I flew, I was wearing deck shoes. You know, those are just kind of loafer leather shoes, and they don't set off magnetometers. I mean, they just don't. No metal in them. Maybe a couple of grommets. And so I said, you know, I'll just walk through the thing. And they said, we recommend you take your shoes off. And I said, it won't set it off. And I walked through and it didn't set it off, sure enough. And they pulled me over to the side and patted me down and did the whole, and took my shoes off and ran them through the x-ray machine and made this whole big deal about it. And, you know, I was fairly laid back about it. I asked, you know, why are you doing this when I didn't set off the magnetometer? And the guy said, well, you know, our guidelines say to do it. If you won't, take off your shoes. And I thought, well, that's pretty strange. So here now, and in fact, it's interesting. I got in a conversation afterwards with a couple of people around me. And one of the main complaints I'm hearing from people who fly a lot is that they're getting athlete's foot. There's athlete's foot being spread because they more often than not, they've got carpets that you have to walk over around these machines, and these things are never cleaned, and so it doesn't sound very sanitary. But here's this. Now, Maureen Dowd last week published an op-ed piece in the New York Times complaining about the fact that women are now being patted down in a very, very personal way. This the result of the Black Widows. These two jets that were brought down in the Soviet Union, what was it, about 2 months ago? And the best guess, and apparently there's a fair amount of evidence, that these were, they call them Black Widows. These are women who are the widows of Chechen fighters. Chechnya, of course, a republic that is largely Muslim, that has been trying to secede, withdraw itself, declare its independence from Russia for centuries, really. And the Russians are not letting them go. And they have, there's just been this absolutely brutal war in Chechnya. That's, that's been going on for this long, long time. And apparently these widows loaded up their bras with plastic explosive and got on airplanes and set themselves off and boom, down went the plane. And so now they're patting down women, particularly well-endowed women. And it's got them really upset. Maureen Dowd wrote this just rip-roaring. Well, now here, International Herald Tribune article about how they're also patting down men, and a lot of men are complaining that they're being groped, you know, in that place. Yes, sure enough. And this one guy talks about how he didn't want to take off his shoes. He says he wears shoes that he knows will go through. And in one case, this screener, you know, says, "You can't look away from me. You have to keep your eyes on me at all times." And he says, "Okay, I'm sorry. Please, just let me get out of here." He says, "Every time I tried to reason with them, they got nastier and nastier." screener, you know, jumping on him for apparently asking a question. I have to say, my experience has been, I've encountered one, you know, I fly a lot, and I've encountered one nasty power tripping screener, and the vast majority of them are really decent people. You know, they're really decent people trying to do their job. I mean, it's got to be a scary job to think, you know, there might be somebody going through with plastic explosive or something on them, and how do you find it? I mean, it's just too much fear being promulgated in the United States these days. It's an unfortunate thing. Vlad Putin has come out about the Ukraine election. The ACLU is concerned that the FBI is doing stuff they shouldn't be doing. Tom DeLay just got $100,000. Interesting stuff. Let me tell you about it right after this. 29 minutes past the hour.
No. No, you may not hang at the park. Yes, even if all your friends are there. Go to Mrs. Feldman's till I'm home from work.
Keeping tabs on your kid after school isn't easy.
Yes, tomorrow too.
But if you don't, she's more likely to do drugs.
No, I am not easier on your brother.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Jesse Russell. The National Labor Relations Board will hear a case today concerning Walmart auto shop workers who have expressed interest in forming a union. 9 of 17 workers at the Walmart Supercenter Tire and Lube Express in Loveland, Colorado, submitted cards to the board. The attempt at organizing a small part of the store indicates a new strategy by the United Food and Commercial Workers in getting through the anti-union barricade of the world's largest retail chain. The union insists that the auto shop is separate from the rest of the store and can therefore organize. When meat cutters at a Walmart store in Texas won union certification in 2000, the company reacted by closing all of its meat cutting departments countrywide. The only officially unionized Walmart is in Quebec, a store that the chain has since threatened to close. In addition, the store recently bowed to pressure in China to allow the Communist Party-sponsored union into stores in that country.
Picket lines continue in Hannibal, Ohio, despite 17 arrests as aluminum manufacturer Ormet files for bankruptcy. The company is seeking to void labor contracts held by the United Steelworkers of America.
Right now we're in a fight for health care and pensions. You know, it's going on across the country. Every company you hear, you know, they want them to pay for their health care. They want them to pay, lose their pensions. They're trying to take our pensions and health care from our retirees.
Jeremy Parker is the vice president of Ohio USWA Local 5724, representing half of the 1,300 union workers at the Ormet Reduction Plant and Rolling Mill.
You know, this is a fight that's not only going on right here at Ormet. It's nationwide. Every time you open the paper, somebody's taking a pension. You know, we're just standing up to them and saying, listen, if you don't want to pay us what we've worked and what our retirees have worked their lifetime for, then there's not going to be an Ormet. You know, I'd rather see that place turn back to cornfields than to live under them conditions.
Working without a contract since August 30th, Ormet employees decided to conduct a work stoppage on November 22nd. The union is waiting to hear from a bankruptcy court judge on plans for reorganization.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. If you're offered the option of working the night shift, you may want to think twice about taking it unless you're married. More than 99 million Americans work the night shift, and a recent study finds that married workers handle it better both emotionally and psychologically. Mark Nagy, head of industrial and organizational psychology at Xavier University in Cincinnati, says that night hours help parents handle things like childcare more efficiently. Single night shift workers tend to feel left out of the mainstream.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
What's the world? What they say isn't true.
And welcome back. Tahoe Kevin in our chat room says, fly these slightly over-friendly skies. That's great. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. The URL, the web URL, TomHartman.com. However you spell it, it'll get you there. The Russian election now. Here, President Vladimir Putin threw his weight Thursday, writes Reuters, behind the Ukraine's outgoing president in his bid to block a quick rerun of a disputed presidential election that the country's opposition thinks would bring it victory. See, here's the thing. Apparently, I'm guessing there were multiple parties in the initial election. There was an initial election, a whole bunch of people. Nobody won a majority, and so they had this runoff. And from what I understand of it, and what Putin is saying is, do the thing over from scratch, invite in all the parties, and I'm guessing a lot of the parties were kind of like opposition parties. And the theory of the guy who the pro-Western guy who is saying he won, but you know others are saying he didn't, is that if there's nobody else on the ballot but him and Yukanovich, then he'll win because there were more anti establishment votes than pro-establishment votes, but there were, you know, multiple parties. And Putin, of course, is saying, well, let's put all those people back on the ballot. I don't know if it's going to work for him. In fact, frankly, I doubt it. And he's also getting pretty cynical here. George Bush said the elections in Ukraine should be open and fair, and the will of the people must be known and heard. An ironic statement coming from George Bush. Putin, on the other hand, says a repeat of the runoff vote may fail to work. The rerun can be held twice, three times, 25 times until one of the parties gets the desired result. Now, you don't know if that's an ironic or cynical statement or if it's a threat. Hard to say. A lot going on in the United States here. The ACLU is now threatening to sue. They're seeking information preparatory to that from the FBI on why bureau task forces set up to combat terrorism are now also checking into anti-war groups, animal rights groups, environmental groups. I don't see talk show hosts on this list. That's reassuring. today. Dozens of organizations have been subjected to scrutiny, according to the ACLU, which was filing Freedom of Information Act requests with the FBI on Thursday to try to find out why. We think it's clear that the public is interested in the possible return of FBI spying on political and religious groups, said Ann Beeson, the ACLU's associate legal counsel. The ACLU provided a list of examples. These are groups that the FBI has now started spying on. The Quakers. The American Friends Service Committee, the Quakers. The Quakers go back a long, long way. And in 1658, the Puritans in Plymouth Colony passed a law that said that if a Quaker was found in Massachusetts, they could suffer the death penalty. And then they started killing Quakers. Mostly they burned the women at the stake. And then they drove the men off. It tells you something about the mentality of the Puritans, I suppose. And Virginia had a law that said the Quakers couldn't come. If a ship arrived and there were Quakers in it, it couldn't be landed. So the Quakers finally found a haven in Pennsylvania. So what do? First thing they do is they try and take over the government, pass a law saying that if you're not in church on Sunday, in a Quaker church on Sunday, then you go to jail if you can't prove that you were either in church or that you were home reading the scriptures. Anyhow, the Quakers have been around here for a long, long time. They somewhat, you could say, safely predate the United States. And the FBI has been monitoring them. The Denver police have been monitoring them. They've labeled this an active case by the local terrorism task force. Others who contend they were improperly monitored or investigated include the Rocky Mountain Animal Defense. Maybe they're one of those groups that commits vandalism and releases animals, but I frankly doubt it. I don't think that the ACLU would be jumping on this list. And the Washington-based Campaign for Labor Rights,
which is just a pro-union group, and a number of peace and environmental activists, individuals. The information requests are being filed with FBI headquarters in Washington, as well as field offices in Colorado, Iowa, Illinois, Michigan, Oregon, New York, Virginia, and Massachusetts, Beeson said. ACLU affiliates in California and New Jersey have previously filed lawsuits seeking similar information. So, lots of interesting stuff here. Tom DeLay is trying to keep out of jail. So guess who gives him $100,000? A private prison corporation, Corrections Corporation of America. They gave DeLay $100,000. And a spokeswoman said the company's charitable deductions are not intended to win influence. Isn't that great? Ferguson announced the $100,000. This is CCA, Corrective Corporation of America, the largest private prison company in America. They're making millions off the anti-drug laws, the three strikes law, all these laws that cause more people to go to prison longer, particularly nonviolent criminals, because they're the most profitable to house. Because they're not that problematic. Right? They just want to get high or something. So you just lock them up. It's not like the violent ones. Ferguson announced a $100,000 gift before scores of guests at a fundraising luncheon for DeLay's Legal Defense Fund, organized by U.S. Representative Hal Rogers, Kentucky's senior congressman. The event also yielded at least $113,000 in donations for the defense fund. DeLay is paying tens of thousands of dollars to defense lawyers in the wake of the September 21 indictments of three of his political aides on charges of money laundering and illegally using corporate money to influence Texas elections. What an irony. 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. William, Texas on the line. Hey, William.
Hi there, Tom. I was just wondering, I heard you talking about taxes yesterday. I was wondering if you're familiar with the comprehensive annual financial reports.
I'm not. Or maybe I am, but I don't know what that phrase means.
Yeah, every city, county, state, independent school district has what's called a comprehensive annual financial report. And that's where you find the entire amount of income and what has been spent for that fiscal year.
Mm-hmm.
When people say that there's a budget deficit, and say for the county, they're actually not—they're lying, but they're not lying. Partially, they're not lying because they're only spending 20 cents on every dollar that they collect in taxes. They slush the rest of the other 80 cents on every dollar into these comprehensive annual financial reports. There's a retired Air Force colonel that has an excellent website that exposes this.
You mean basically they're creating what in nonprofit accounting is called a fund balance, and in for-profit accounting is called profit.
Leftover money. It's guesstimated $60 trillion worth of these slush funds, and when you consider all the states, counties, cities, independent school districts in the country, that's not being spent on the taxpayers.
Well, that's interesting. I'll have to look into that. I'm not familiar with that. I'm sorry.
His website's www.cafrman.com, and he has very excellent details. He's a retired Air Force colonel who's an accountant.
Okay. I'll check it out.
Okay.
Thanks, William.
Okay.
I appreciate it. CAFR... I'm writing it down here, man.com, so I will check it out. 1-866-889-8895. I know that there are accounting things. I mean, you have to have enough money to be sure to run to the end of the fiscal year and all that kind of stuff. But I find it hard to believe that, like, my little town here, it's not like the government here in Montpelier with 8,900 people, that the government is of them, right? I mean, I walk down the street and I see the mayor. And I know the people on the city council, and I've only lived here, 5 years in this city? And you run into these people. I sometimes these theories about, it's the them are doing that, it's kind of a stretch. On the other hand, maybe there's something there. I'll check it out and report back. Dan in Rockford, Illinois on the line. Hey, Dan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I'm telling everyone I know about your show.
Well, thank you.
And I wanted to point out that I really think that Americans don't appreciate democracy anymore, and we're getting a real good lesson from these folks in the Ukraine. It's a participatory sport. In East Timor during the 98 referendum. And people would literally, little ladies would kiss their ballots and say a Hail Mary before they put it in the ballot box.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a country that, you know, 1/6 of its population was, you know, murdered by General Suharto.
Right, and with the help of General Kissinger.
Well, with the help of every American president, actually.
But Henry really set that thing up. But that's a whole other discussion.
I think we're going to have to lose a lot more freedom, actually, before people, and we're going to have a financial crisis like they did in Indonesia before they kicked that bum out, Suharto, and before we kick these bums out who are the same capitalist cronies.
Well, I hope not, Dan, because both of those things have significant downsides. I mean, in Germany in the 30s, they had a loss of civil liberties, and look where it led them. They also had a fiscal crisis, and it led them to that. It's interesting when you look at the fact that the United States and Germany were both dealing with the Great Depression in the early 30s, and Germany was, you know, largely by that time recovering from the hyperinflation of the 20s and the Versailles reparations problem. But we chose very different paths. In response to a worldwide depression, Hitler declared that a war against terrorism as a result of Marius von der Lubbe burning down the Reichstag, you know, the parliament building on February 28, 1930, what was it, 32, I believe it was, or 33. Anyhow, Hitler declared a war on terror and said that there was a them out there that was trying to get us, the Germans. And the them initially was the communists, and then it morphed into the Jews.
In America now, the them is Muslim America.
Oh, I know. Who are also Semitic people. I mean, this is anti-Semitism revisited. It's just not Jewish anti-Semitism.
Well, you can go to these. We get nothing but terrible Bible thumping radio here in Rockford, Illinois. And I've listened to these people from Texas things, and they're literally saying, you know, there's a coming war against Arab. There's a holy war. They're talking about like a Christian jihad against them.
Oh, I know. It's like Father Coughlin in the late 30s here in the United States.
I mean, isn't that hate speech?
It is. It is. And it's dangerous and it's destructive. And at the same time, though, that Hitler was doing that in Germany, that he was responding to the Great Depression by telling the German people that all their problems were the result of a them. Roosevelt in the United States was saying all our problems are the result of something that we did, some mistakes that we made that we can fix. We can correct our financial system. We're going to rebuild our banking system. We're going to rebuild our economic base. We're going to put people back to work. We're going to make the government the employer of last resort. And he started the WPA to get people back to work no matter what, you know. That we're going to create a system that works for all. And we moved toward greater democracy in the United States, whereas Germany moved toward, obviously, fascism and then despotism. And those are the choices, basically, that we face today. And I get very uncomfortable when people suggest that things have to get worse before they'll get better, because if they get much worse, it could be the tipping point that pushes us in that Germany direction rather than in that Roosevelt direction. I think instead of waiting around for things to get worse or even, you know, rejoicing in them getting worse, what we need to be doing is awakening people to what can be done. And this is the point, Dan, that you made in your first sentence that I think is so important. You said, as I recall, something to the effect of Americans don't appreciate democracy. I think that it's even worse than that. Most Americans don't understand democracy. We aren't teaching it in our schools anymore. Most Americans are unfamiliar with American history. Most Americans, if you were to ask them what the three historic tyrannies were that all the founders talked about, any American over 50 or 60 years of age couldn't, or under 50 or 60 years of age, probably couldn't tell you that it was, you know, kingdoms, kings, theocrats, and the rich, feudal society. But this was common knowledge. I mean, this stuff was taught in our schools up through the 50s and 60s. And we are at risk, in my opinion, of losing our civil society if we don't start educating people about how democracies work and what the will of the people means, and, you know, and go beyond the right-wing soundbite slogans of it's your money and less government and stuff like that. You know, what is the role of government to begin with? It's not just more or less.
Well, I mean, I think you're one of the few people who has actually a vision for the future who's on radio. I've given up on Air America, and if you know of anybody else who has a positive vision, I'd be curious to...
Well, there's some good people out there. Tony Trupiano is doing a great job in Michigan, and he's on right after I am. I'm pretty sure you can pick him up on the web. He's on a whole bunch of stations all over Michigan. And, yeah, there's some good people. I think Randy Rhodes is doing a great job. I think Ed Schultz is doing a good job. I think that there are some good voices out there on the left, and we need a lot more. And I have a feeling they're coming because we're having success and the industry is noticing that and saying, interesting, maybe this is the next thing. Anyhow, Dan, I got to move along. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Keep listening and keep spreading the good word. Kevin in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania on the line, 1-866-888-9889 for our telephone number. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up, Kevin?
I'm a second-time caller. So I just had one little problem with your thinly veiled reference to comparing the Bush administration to, Germany in the 30s. You had mentioned that Hitler started a, quote-unquote, war on terrorism, and they started blaming all his problems on, I'm using my quote fingers, them.
Right.
Well, obviously, in Hitler's case, them was an imaginary world Jewry, correct? Something along those lines?
Ultimately, yeah. Actually, he started out with the communists, who were real.
Illusion.
Well, no. He started out pointing to the Bolsheviks and the communists. I mean, the communist revolution had just happened in Russia, which is like the next country over. And that's who he was pointing at. And Marius von der Lubbe was, apparently, a member of the Communist Party in Holland. And so, you know, Hitler had some basis in reality for making that claim.
Very, very, very slim to compare all the problems Germany was having in the 30s, too.
I don't disagree with you. Kevin, we got about 10 seconds. Is that your point?
Here we do have a them. It's clearly outlined that they're Arab extremists, Muslim extremists that are the them. Everybody knows it. There's a them out there for this war on terrorism.
Yeah, I don't disagree, Kevin, and I'll respond more directly to you on that right after this break. Thanks for the call and for making the good point. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
An
international agreement marks a small step toward protecting a fearsome fish. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Great white sharks frighten a lot of people, but people scare sharks even more. Commercial fishing kills a lot of sharks all over the world, and in some places this pressure is excessive. But the global trade in shark meat will now be under closer scrutiny. New rules for selling it are now part of the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species. George Burgess is a shark expert with the University of Florida, and he's active in shark conservation. He says the international agreement provides different levels of protection to endangered species. The action on white sharks is listed in Appendix 2, and it requires monitoring the trade in shark fins and shark meat.
Some might say, well, so what? We're not a whole lot better off than what we are. White sharks are still dying. Fins are still being moved from point A to point B. But the fact of the matter is getting the species listed on Appendix 2 is a first step, and a very significant first step. It puts the animal under a magnifying glass, so any trade in this animal now will have to be monitored very carefully and documented, and so we'll get a much better indication of exactly how much is moving around.
Some parts of the international agreement specifically prohibit trade in some species. The recent action on white sharks does not do that, but Burgess says it's still a great step forward.
Shark populations are on decline in most areas of the world as a result of overfishing and habitat loss. And so getting the largest of the predatory sharks, the white shark, aboard Appendix 2 is a real plus. And so hopefully this will put the plight of sharks worldwide on the front page.
The action on white sharks came during a meeting of international delegates in October. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Interesting discussion in the chat room speculating about Keith Olbermann's characterization of Bev Harris. Interesting. I'm going to have to check that thing out. I recorded it last night, but I didn't see it. But Bev Harris, went down to Florida to file her lawsuit. Anyway, we'll get to that later on in the program. I want to respond to Kevin's point about the them. Kevin, you're absolutely right. And the them, as of 9/11, was probably 5,000 to 10,000 people. If that, there's considerable evidence that the hardcore let's get Americans bunch around Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan, the what we called Al-Qaeda. Bin Laden himself didn't call it Al-Qaeda until we gave him that brand, and he picked it up and said, oh, cool, you've given me a logo and a brand here, I'll take it. Was only a few hundred people, maybe a few thousand. As many as 20,000 people had gone through their training camps, but most of them had no idea that this is the extent that it, they thought that they were freedom fighters. I mean, they were one of the main things that these folks were talking about was overthrowing repressive regimes in the Middle East. And the Saudis, of course, the Saudi regime was very high on bin Laden's list. He really didn't like the Saudi royal family. And to this day, as is one of his major missions to overthrow them. I think that that's one of the reasons why he had, 15 Saudis on those planes. He was hoping that it would cause the United States to attack Saudi Arabia and do his dirty work for him. Instead, we did Iran's dirty work for them, and we attacked Iraq. But that's another thing. But anyhow, the point is that on 9/11, Muslims all over the world watched those towers fall and were horrified. There were street vigils in Iran. All around the Muslim world, there was an outpouring of sympathy for America and horror at these Muslim extremists. Just like Christians across America were horrified when Tim McVeigh blew up the federal building claiming he did it in the name of Christ, for Christianity, specifically for white Christians, in McVeigh's case. And had we reacted appropriately, we could have taken that horror, that revulsion, and used it to embrace the Muslim world and bring it with us. But instead, our reaction was one of belligerence and anger, of pushing away, of saying, okay, you guys, you're the them and we're the us. And there's a them and an us. You know, this absolute polarization that George Bush perpetrated. And it was the absolute wrong response. It was Afghanistan had indicated they were perfectly willing to negotiate giving Osama bin Laden to us. We could have done that. Pakistan was willing to cooperate. We didn't have to invade Iraq. Iraq had nothing to do with this whatsoever. And instead now we have created more terrorists and more profits for Bush and his buddies. And that's the bottom line, and it's a shame.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Jesse Russell. The National Labor Relations Board will hear a case today concerning Walmart auto shop workers who have expressed interest in forming a union. 9 of 17 workers at the Walmart Supercenter Tire and Lube Express in Loveland, Colorado, submitted cards to the board. The attempt at organizing a small part of the store indicates a new strategy by the United Food and Commercial Workers in getting through the anti-union barricade of the world's largest retail chain. The union insists that the auto shop is separate from the rest of the store and can therefore organize. When meat cutters at a Walmart store in Texas won union certification in 2000, the company reacted by closing all of its meat cutting departments countrywide. The only officially unionized Walmart is in Quebec, a store that the chain has since threatened to close. In addition, the store recently bowed to pressure in China to allow the Communist Party-sponsored union into stores in that country.
Picket lines continue in Hannibal, Ohio, despite 17 arrests as aluminum manufacturer Ormet files for bankruptcy. The company is seeking to void labor contracts held by the United Steelworkers of America.
Right now we're in a fight for health care and pensions. You know, it's going on across the country. Every company you hear, you know, they want them to pay for their health care. They want them to pay, lose their pensions. They're trying to take our pensions and health care from our retirees.
Jeremy Parker is the vice president of Ohio USWA Local 5724, representing half of the 1,300 union workers at the Ormet Reduction Plant and Rolling Mill.
You know, this is a fight that's not only going on right here at Ormet. It's nationwide. Every time you open the paper, somebody's taking a pension. You know, we're just standing up to them and saying, listen, if you don't want to pay us what we've worth and what our retirees have worked their lifetime for, then there's not going to be an Ormet. You know, I'd rather see that place turn back to cornfields than to live under them conditions.
Working without a contract since August 30th, Ormet employees decided to conduct a work stoppage on November 22nd. The union is waiting to hear from a bankruptcy court judge on plans for reorganization.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. If you're offered the option of working the night shift, you may want to think twice about taking it unless you're married. More than 99 million Americans work the night shift, and a recent study finds that married workers handle it better both emotionally and psychologically. Mark Nagy, head of industrial and organizational psychology at Xavier University in Cincinnati, says that night hours help parents handle things like childcare more efficiently. Single night shift workers tend to feel left out of the mainstream.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Why is it that when George W. says he's going to reform something, I instinctively want to grab my money, my liberties, my family, and flee to the woods? For the Bushites, the word reform means deform, to monkey wrench the system so the rich get richer and the rest of us get stooked. Still, there's one system crying out for real reform, the bankruptcy process that corporations are using to stiff their employees, letting CEOs simply walk away from binding contracts on wages, health care, and pensions. At present, the big abusers are United, U.S. Air, Delta, and other major airlines that have been poorly managed and now are being squeezed by their bankers and jet fuel suppliers. Screaming poverty, these airlines have rushed a bankruptcy court, demanding that judges allow them to abrogate legitimate contracts they had negotiated in good faith with their pilots, flight attendants, mechanics, and others. These are loyal, long-time, hard-working employees who already have made concession after concession, giving back billions of dollars that were owed to them. Yet the CEOs are demanding still more, using the federal bankruptcy law as their weapon for this mugging. This one-sided law apparently legalizes end runs to let corporations weasel out of their obligations. What an interesting lesson for all of us who've been taught that a contract is sacrosanct, a legally binding giving of one's word. Here's my question. Why do the CEOs only target the workers for cost-cutting? Why not tell Exxon and the other fuel suppliers, no, we can't pay your gouging prices, so we're abrogating those commitments? Or why not say to the super wealthy bankers, you take some of the pain too? Why do they only pound their workers? This is Jim Hightower saying, I don't know about you, but on my flights, I'd rather have a disgruntled banker or fuel supplier than an angry pilot, flight attendant, or mechanic. It's time to fix the bankruptcy law that has legalized the corporate robbery of workers.
Your oldest has just turned driving age. Time to add them to your policy. So you get in your car, drive down to your insurance company. Hunt for a space, double park, get a parking ticket, get in a fight with the meter maid, get thrown in jail, meet a guy named Wally. Wait a minute. This is just a bad dream. You've got Geico. You don't have to drive anywhere. You can do all that car insurance stuff online. Oh, that was a close one.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. Online at geico.com.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec, nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use a direct...
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Swami Beyondananda has been a guest on our program a number of times. He just issued his top 11 reasons to be thankful this year. I thought this was nice. I'll share one a day with you for a while. Here's one for today. He says, a healthy skepticism is replacing unhealthy cynicism. It's a reason to be thankful. He says, after 4 years of truth decay and irony deficiency, we're finally getting our skeptic system cleaned out. A clogged skeptic caused by too much misinformation, disinformation, and dissing information, all used to dismiss the missing information, can lead to hardening of the artistries and unhealthy cynicism. That's why many people have sworn off junk food news.
They're finding purer news online, feeling a little closer to the source, feeding a little closer to the source, and starting to financially support these alternative networks. And that's how we will make news better and make better news, by putting our money where our mouse is. Well, the Swami has a way with words. One of our 11 reasons to be thankful, talking about the alternative media and all that sort of thing. It's time for our electile dysfunction alert. It's the machine, voting machines, as it were.
Welcome, my son.
Uh-oh. Yes, the Columbus Free Press on Election Day posted a disturbing story, later confirmed, this by Richard Hayes Phillips about the Ohio recount, later confirmed by the Columbus Dispatch. The Free Press reported the Franklin County Board of Elections Director Matt Damschroeder deliberately withheld voting machines from predominantly black Democratic wards in Columbus and dispersed some of the machines to affluent white suburbs in Franklin County. Damschroeder is the former executive director of the Franklin County Republican Party. Sources close to the Board of Elections told the Free Press that Damschroeder and Ohio Secretary of State Kenneth Blackwell met with President George W. Bush in Columbus on Election Day. Remember when he stopped in Ohio on his flight back to Washington, D.C.? Or was he flying back to Texas? I forget which. But in any case, he stopped in Ohio on Election Day. He was meeting with these guys who were moving the voting machines away from the primarily Democratic districts into the Republican districts. The idea, he notes, was to discourage turnout in Democratic wards by forcing voters to wait in long lines at polling places. Such a strategy would be far more effective than encouraging turnout in Republican wards. In other words, if you can suppress the other guy, that's a heck of a lot easier than encouraging your own people to show up. And apparently, it was successful. In precincts that had predominantly gone for Bush in 2000, the turnout rate was 60.56%. In those that went for Kerry, largely Kerry this time, and had gone for Gore before, the turnout rate was a full 10% lower, 50.78%. So they looked at that and said, well, could it be that the people in the Kerry precincts just weren't as interested in voting? No. They went through and they analyzed the number of voting machines as a percentage of citizens in the county and discovered, sure enough, there's a clear statistical correlation there. That's what this is about. People waiting in line. Those 10-hour lines you saw, those were in the Democratic districts. The 30-minute lines, the one-hour lines, those were in the Republican districts. The 10-minute lines. Ohio Supreme Court today, this from The Guardian of all places, a UK paper. George Bush's victory in the U.S. presidential election will be challenged in Ohio's Supreme Court, or it is being. Cliff Arnick, a lawyer representing a group of voters challenging the Ohio results, claims new analysis of various anomalies suggests the vote was rigged, not unlike what happened in the Ukraine. We're calling, Mr. Arnbeck told The Guardian yesterday, we're calling for a reversal of the result based on evidence developed in the course of litigation. Exit polling and substantial irregularities excluded votes that should have been counted. There is evidence that votes cast for one candidate were moved to the column of the other candidate. This guy's a legal advisor to the Alliance for Democracy, which my old friend Ronnie Duggar started. He said the contest of election lawsuit will be presented to a judge from the Ohio Supreme Court on behalf of at least 25 disgruntled voters. The hearings in Ohio have brought to light new evidence of malpractice. Said one voter in the pro-Republican group caught destroying Democratic registration documents in Nevada before the election had also been operating in Ohio. And he points out that the exit polls showed that John Kerry won Ohio. What happened? What happened to those votes? Our number is 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to call in. The website, tomhartman.com. You want to drop into our live chat, just click the live chat button. If you want to visit our message boards, click the message board button. 50,000 messages in there. I haven't counted recently, but a lot of great people having some fascinating conversations about a whole variety of topics. And on the message boards, people can even, you know, put in URLs and things you can click through. See, it's a great compendium of cool stuff. Let's take a couple calls. Billy in Santa Cruz, California on the line. Hey, Billy, welcome to the program.
Hey, guy.
Once again, just love the Bandler and Grindler, Frogs into Princes stuff. It's really, if you understand Reframe, you understand the Republicans and how they play the game.
Well, and historically how people have been persuaded politically in all kinds of situations. Yeah, we're going to continue that. We're getting a really positive response to it. So every Tuesday in the second hour of the program, we're going to be doing a little mini NLP lesson.
You know, remember, once we go on from NLP, we go right to that new religion, Scientology?
No. No.
Well, but see, that's what they're using, you see. That's what this whole idea of clearing is, getting people to stop being in reaction to stimulus.
Yeah, well,
and
see,
be able to become authentic in that moment.
Yeah, actually, L. Ron Hubbard he wrote science fiction. In fact, a friend of mine, Jack Vance, who's a science fiction writer, Jack Vance, Paul Anderson, Robert Silverberg, Frank Herbert, and L. Ron Hubbard were building a boat together in California. It's a whole long story I can tell you about sometime, but it's...
L. Ron on a bet said, I bet you I can start a religion.
That's what he said. Well, actually, he published an article in Amazing Stories. Campbell, I forget his first name. Don Campbell, I think, yeah. Published this thing, and about the planet, people from the planet Theta had come to the Earth, and they had seeded the Earth, and they were going to come back 10,000 years later. This was 10,000 years ago. They're going to come back 10,000 years later, and all the clear people, that is all mentally clear, they were going to take back up in their spaceship and take them off. And that's the highest secret that you learn in Scientology.
Now, it turns out, though, that the only clear people are really stupid actors.
Yeah, it seems. And the interesting thing, though, the distinction that I want to make, and not being an expert on Scientology, I'm probably not qualified to make it, but I'll make the comment anyway, and this will probably draw their ire, but... perhaps not. I don't know. My take on Scientology, from what I have read, and I've my favorite book on this is Barefaced Messiah by Russell Miller, The True Story of L. Ron Hubbard, is that really Scientology is based on Freudian psychotherapy. That's the, you know, along with the lie detectors. You know, they basically use a GSR, a galvanic skin response device, a lie detector to check, you know, if your palms are sweating, your resistance goes down. So they got this meter, you know, the E-meter.
The E-meter, yeah.
Yeah, now they've computerized
it.
Okay,
well, we don't want to go there.
And, yeah, in fact, actually, Jerry Schneiderman and I used to own a company. We sold parts for computers, and the Church of Scientology was one of our larger clients. This was back in the 70s. That's how I first discovered them.
The best thing you can say about them is they paid on time.
Well, they did, and they did it through a front company. We didn't realize that it was Scientology
for at least a year.
I mean, they were one of our largest clients, and for at least a year, we had no idea it was Scientology.
So, perfect.
Anyway.
Well, I wanted to talk about abstinence only, but first I wanted to throw a couple things into the mix real quick.
Yeah.
That is, you just had a piece on the airlines and the airline management.
Yeah.
And it couldn't be more true. I want to give you a modern example of what's going on with Merck, the drug company.
Oh, yeah.
So... These guys, these awful people, are willing to let people get sick on their drug after
they just set aside a huge bonus program to give millions of dollars to their top executives in the event the company tanks.
Well, now here's the point. Before that, that's my point I'm going to make.
Yeah.
Before the golden parachute, these guys did a bad job managing the company.
Yeah.
So now that the company's weakened and might get taken over, they will get three times their salary.
I know.
If they fail.
I know.
So here we go again.
It's in my stack of stuff, actually,
like
to rant about.
It's not the stockholders anymore.
Yeah.
Management takes it all. The stockholders don't get it.
I know.
The stockholders, for example, who were part of Trump's business plans, they all got screwed. Trump did fine.
Yeah, well, not that and his suppliers. I mean, not to mention his suppliers. Billy, you raised a great point. Thanks for it. I appreciate it, and I appreciate the call. It's always good to hear from you. We got to move along, though. We got a bunch of calls here. Armin in Sarasota, Florida, on the line. Hey, Armin, what's on your mind today?
Well, you know, you commented that a lot of people aren't aware of what's going on. I'll tell you, a lot of people, most, if not most, many people, in my observation of people in everyday life, are aware of the sports scores.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, you know, you make a really good point, Armin, and I appreciate it. There are so many people in America who think that politics is something that happens for 6 months before an election. And this was, in fact, the point that both Howard Dean and Bernie Sanders made last night at this meetup, this Democracy for America meetup. Is that politics is something that goes on 365 days a year. And Bernie Sanders made, and I'm sure he'll rant about it tomorrow when he's on our program, he made this really good point that people have to realize that their lives are connected to politics. He said, you know, people will say, you say to people, you know, you've lost your job, and they go, yeah, but, you know, that doesn't have anything to do with politics. You got a job that pays less, yeah, but that doesn't have anything to do with politics. So you don't have health care, yeah, but that doesn't have anything to do. And you have to help people realize this all has something to do with politics, very much something to do with politics. So let's move along here. John in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Tom, you are incredible. You are absolutely incredible. You've been a walking stereotype for the conspiracy theory addled liberal brain for the last hour. I just can't believe it.
Well, I'm glad you're impressed, John.
I haven't heard you say Enron or Halliburton yet, but you did talk about Bush's cronies in the war, and so that's good. I mean, you got that in there.
John, are you trying to tell me that Bush's cronies aren't making profit on this war?
You know,
this is a serious question, John.
No, it's ridiculous. You know, as long as you talk about this kind of stuff, you are going to have a hard time getting anybody from the middle or the other side to take you seriously because it's...
John, you don't think that the average American person, the average American who has seen that their jobs are going overseas and that people in Halliburton's paying people $150,000 a year to go over to Iraq, and Halliburton has got millions and millions of dollars that are now unaccountable for. Halliburton has paid huge fines for ripping off the government. Halliburton set up a front company in the Caymans so that they didn't have to pay U.S. taxes. And when Congress tried to pass a law that said any contractor that's going to take our tax dollars that in Iraq, when Congress tried to pass a law that said any contractor that wants to take our tax dollars in Iraq has to pay U.S. taxes, Halliburton said, no, we're not going to do that. And they lobbied hard enough that they got that law passed. Yeah, give me a break, John. Give me a break.
You're cutting me off, aren't you?
Yeah, I potted you down. You were trying to talk over me.
Well, I'd be happy to talk some more.
All righty, I'll put you on hold. Right. It's 20 minutes after the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And John in Grand Rapids. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
I spent years learning to cope with my mental health problems and just as long conquering substance addiction. But I did both, and I'm incredibly proud. But with the world and everything going on today, I get so overwhelmed. It's so tempting to turn to drugs and alcohol to help me escape. I don't want all of my accomplishments to just go away.
If you or someone you know is abusing drugs and alcohol to cope, get information and treatment and referral at 1-800-662-HELP.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs. In the U.S., there's a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs in projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on the clerical error.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
We say we build democracy, but really build refineries and drill for our prosperity from oil in the ground. The earth just might be warming from the oil that would burn, but I'm a simple man and that's too difficult to learn.
Oh, boy. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. We were talking to John in Grand Rapids, Michigan. John, I'm assuming, number one, that you, like me, love our country and believe this is a great land and want the very best for us and our people. And I'm assuming that you also had some point to make other than telling me that you think I'm nuts.
I don't understand liberals. I really don't.
Let's try and find some common ground.
I think we have some common ground in our worry about big corporations. It's just that let me throw a name at you that somebody's heard of. John Stossel.
Sure.
That name.
Oh, yeah. John is a libertarian.
He went into the journalism biz looking to bring down corporations, and you know what? Where he is now, he's trying to bring down government because he found a heck of a lot more corruption in government than he could ever find in corporations.
Well, and he also found about an $850,000 a year salary from a corporation.
But isn't it interesting that he's about the only one like that in the whole mainstream ABC, CBS, NBC? He's an anomaly. And
yeah, I'd say I don't disagree with you. John Stossel is neither conservative nor liberal, though. John Stossel is a libertarian. I mean, he's pretty outspoken about it. And the libertarians
more conservative than a liberal.
Well, he believes that pot should be legalized, prostitution should be legalized. He's got a lot of positions. Abortion should be completely free and decriminalized. He's got a lot of positions that I suspect a lot of Republicans would disagree with. He also doesn't think that there should be any regulation of corporate behavior. I mean, I think that John has bought into the utopian. You know, there's utopianism on the left, the communism, and there's utopianism on the right, which is the libertarianism. And I think that both of them have gone too far, frankly.
Could be.
I mean, the reality is that there are psychopaths among us. Sometimes they end up in control of government, and we got to watch out for that. Big government is a serious problem.
And that's another one of my problems. It's this animus that you have towards Bush, it just does not wash. And I think the vote showed that people can say a lot of things about Bush, but the idea that he's an indecent or to the point of almost being evil just does not wash.
John, I have to say, I don't think you've ever heard me say that.
Oh,
in fact,
awfully close.
Yesterday...
You call, you,
let me tell you the words you have used.
Sure.
The Bush crime family.
No, I said Mike Malloy refers to as the Bush crime family. Yes,
I heard you say the Bush crime family.
I said what Mike Malloy refers to as the Bush crime family.
Isn't that interesting?
Well, okay.
That's clever.
It's actually, you know, I'll give you that. You know, I've used that phrase probably twice in 2 years, and with some discomfort, because I do. You know, I mean, you look at the. I'm assuming that you are familiar with Kevin Phillips' book about the Bush family.
I read Arrogant Capital. I love that book, and ever since then, Kevin Phillips has been going downhill, in my estimation.
Yeah.
I got to
tell you, John. You read his book about the Bush family, and you'll start to think of them as an organized crime family.
No, I wouldn't.
You haven't read the book, so you don't know.
I don't think like organized crime family. I mean,
yeah,
not W. No way. The guy
may not be, but you know, as I said to we had a caller yesterday who was trashing W, and I said we have to respect the presidency even if we don't respect the president. And frankly, I don't respect George W. Bush, but I do respect the presidency, and I will continue to honor the presidency.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't know it from listening to you, but I mean, I guess I don't understand that. These are not my only issues.
Yeah.
As a liberal, you have been wrong about almost everything important for the last.
Well, you know, generalizations don't wash, John. But I'm always glad to talk with you on any individual point.
I'll talk to you about that now if you want.
Well, no, I've got three. I got a bunch of other calls here. We've done enough. But give me a call tomorrow. I mean, we can continue on this. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you, and thank you very much for the call. I do appreciate it. It's a Tom Hartman program, 29 minutes past the hour. Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Jesse Russell. The National Labor Relations Board will hear a case today concerning Walmart auto shop workers who have expressed interest in forming a union. 9 of 17 workers at the Walmart Supercenter Tire and Lube Express in Loveland, Colorado, submitted cards to the board. The attempt at organizing a small part of the store indicates a new strategy by the United Food and Commercial Workers in getting through the anti-union barricade of the world's largest retail chain. The union insists that the auto shop is separate from the rest of the store and can therefore organize. When meat cutters at a Walmart store in Texas won union certification in 2000, the company reacted by closing all of its meat cutting departments countrywide. The only officially unionized Walmart is in Quebec, a store that the chain has since threatened to close. In addition, the store recently bowed to pressure in China to allow the Communist Party-sponsored union into stores in that country.
Picket lines continue in Hannibal, Ohio, despite 17 arrests as aluminum manufacturer Ormet files for bankruptcy. The company is seeking to void labor contracts held by the United Steelworkers of America.
Right now we're in a fight for health care and pensions. You know, it's going on across the country. Every company you hear, you know, they want them to pay for their health care. They want them to pay, lose their pensions. They're trying to take our pensions and health care from our retirees.
Jeremy Parker is the vice president of Ohio USWA Local 5724, representing half of the 1,300 union workers at the Ormet Reduction Plant and Rolling Mill.
Now, this is a fight that's not only going on right here at Ormet. It's nationwide. Every time you open the paper, somebody's taking a pension. You know, we're just standing up to them and saying, listen, if you don't want to pay us what we've worth and what our retirees have worked their lifetime for, then there's not going to be an Ormet. You know, I'd rather see that place turn back to cornfields than to live under them conditions.
Working without a contract since August 30th, Ormet employees decided to conduct a work stoppage on November 22nd. The union is waiting to hear from a bankruptcy court judge on plans for reorganization.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. If you're offered the option of working the night shift, you may want to think twice about taking it unless you're married. More than 99 million Americans work the night shift, and a recent study finds that married workers handle it better both emotionally and psychologically. Mark Nagy, head of industrial and organizational psychology at Xavier University in Cincinnati, says that night hours help parents handle things like childcare more efficiently. Single night shift workers tend to feel left out of the mainstream.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back.
You know, I really respect John for calling the program. I encourage our conservative friends and listeners to call in. I will not call you names. You're welcome to call me names, but it doesn't further the discourse. I think that it's really important that we start looking at these issues. I mean, there's a legitimate difference of agreement or difference of opinion, for example, on is health care a right or not. I can see both sides of that argument. I have a side that I believe it should be a human right in this day and age. But, you know, I understand the other side of the argument. For example, and there's a whole bunch of different, you know, let's pick some topics and talk about it. If we don't respect and you know, honestly and openly and frankly talk with people who disagree with us, we're going to get nowhere. Going to get nowhere. So, anyhow, we got a whole bunch of calls here, and I believe we've also got a news report. I'm waiting for Ira to type this thing in. 1-866-889-8894. Yeah, it's Victoria Jones. 889-8964 is our telephone number. Hey, Victoria, we've got to make this one short. I've got a whole stack of phone calls here that I want to get through this hour.
Absolutely.
But what's up in Washington, D.C.? Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service.
Yay! Well, one of the main things up in Washington, D.C. is the lighting of the White House Christmas tree later today.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big event in Washington because it's an opportunity for everybody to pretend that they like each other.
Ah, yes.
And, you know, it's a very fractious town right now, so that becomes increasingly important.
You know, there was a time when they did like each other.
Yes, there was. And you know? Many of the older politicians, senators in particular, are really regretting that time is gone.
Yeah, mourning the loss of that. I remember Barry Goldwater speaking well of the Kennedys. You know, carry on. Next story.
Next story. So there is that. We have President Bush nominating Nebraska Governor Mike Johanns to be Secretary of Agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
Not the most exciting news in the world, but it's an extremely important position, so we'll no doubt hear a great deal more about him over the next day or so.
Yeah.
And I have to be frank to say that to a certain extent I'm playing catch-up because I've been overseas for the last week and got back late last night.
Mm.
So, of course, I've been following U.S. news, but a bit of overseas news. The big story everywhere else in the world, and I'm sure you're talking about it, unlike most of your cohorts, is the Ukraine election.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
the disaster that this has proved to be.
Yeah, yeah. And we discussed that in the last hour. Okay. Victoria, thank you very much for the update. It's always great to hear from you.
I will talk to you tomorrow.
Okay. We'll talk to you then.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks a lot. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. And let's see, Mike in Orlando, Florida on the line. Hey, Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tom. You might shy away from it, but I won't. It is the crime family, and I get kind of irritated with this kind of call. I need to remind you the Silverado savings and loan.
Oh, yeah, and Neil Bush. And all, yeah,
Arkin
and,
Energy.
I don't disagree with you, Mike, and I think that when, in a way, that is name-calling. And when you get into name-calling, what you do is you push away any opportunity to talk with the people who you are name-calling at.
It's labeling, and I think both sides using it to extent. But let me go on here. The administration that outs CIA agents that they need to get back at, mm-hmm. they look for ways to circumvent international laws to encourage torture, secrecy that makes Nixon's administration look like an open book. They don't mind the gutting environmental laws, as long as they said if it's going to harm one American job, they ain't going to, you know, have a law on the environmental law on the book that's going to hurt an American job. Yet they don't mind outsourcing. Openly, the administration is for it. Yeah. And by the way, I think it's framing. We should use the environment as a life support system is how we should have referred to it.
Which it is.
And not to mention lying to the United States, the citizens of this country, the rest of this world, knowingly to get into a war and attack a nation that had neither the means nor intent to harm this country. Then he goes out and says the mission is accomplished, and then he gets bored with it and challenges them to bring it on.
Mike, I'm familiar with the litany. You know, I have a list of complaints about the administration, too. I mean, Victoria was just reporting to the new agriculture secretary. I mean, the fact that the last agriculture secretary was the former head of the Cattlemen's Association.
I'm not doing it to remind you. I'm doing it to remind listeners like him.
Yeah, the person in charge of the timber, in the government is a former timber lobbyist. I mean, you know, we are giving away our government to corporate interests, and it's not, I mean, that's no more good than government becoming oppressive in the other direction, you know.
One thing I've been meaning to talk about and the dangers of this war are, we're not far from fighting a war that's not going to have any casualties, and I don't mean to belittle the loss of lives we've had, but once this nation is able to fight a war with nearly zero casualties, what do you think is going to stop us from the arrogant foreign policy we have right now and just putting it anywhere we want?
I think that the good people in the United States are going to stop us, Mike. I think the good people in the United States, people like you and me and conservatives as well, who are concerned. I don't think that there are I don't think that there's anybody in the United States who simply wants to go around the world and kick butt and be a bully. I really don't. I think what I found fascinating was the exit polls that were done in this last election. Over 70% of the people who voted for George W. Bush believed that Saddam Hussein had somehow was directly involved in the attacks of 9/11, when in fact he had not only no knowledge of them, but no involvement of them, and was on the other side. I mean, Osama bin Laden had tried to talk the Saudis into letting him attack Saddam Hussein. These guys were bitter enemies. And 70% of Bush voters were that misinformed, and fewer than 10% of Kerry voters were that misinformed. And what that tells me is that it's not people being stupid. It's not people being bad. It's not people, you know, encouraging Bush in a bad policy. It's people being misinformed. And our job has to be to help inform people, you know, not just to beat them up, but just to help inform them, to share the information. Mike, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you.
All right.
1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Preston in Denver, Colorado on the line. Thanks for waiting patiently, Preston. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I think in addition to people being misinformed, I think there's a part of the population that doesn't mind being misinformed because, you know, they may be involved in our military-industrial complex, or they may have a job through the military in some other capacity, and they want to believe that there are all these evil people out there that must be destroyed by this half-a-trillion-dollar weapons
budget
we have.
Again, I think that this is where we go to the stage two, and you make most people have to be able to look themselves in the mirror when they get up in the morning.
Yeah.
And that people working for the defense industry or whatever, I mean, you know, a lot of people just justify what they do by, hey, it's just a job. You know, when we lived in Atlanta, I knew somebody who worked for R.J. Reynolds. You know, she was, you know, low down in the machine, as it were, and hey, it was just a job. It paid $35,000 a year. She could put her kid through school. You know, am I to criticize that because it's a tobacco company and they're killing people? I mean, I can't. But I also think that there are a lot of people who subscribe to this neocon philosophy that Wolfowitz and Cheney and Rumsfeld and Feith and Pearl put together, that if we take a major nation in the Middle East and turn it into an American-style democracy, that will be so, it'll be so beautiful and it'll look so great and it'll work so well that all the other Arabs in the Middle East will look at the kings and, you know, the corrupt governments that are ruling them and say, we don't want these bums anymore, and they'll flip them and it'll turn, in the Middle East will become safe, you know, better, a better place. And I think that they really believed that. They were wrong. They didn't, you know, they didn't look at the evidence of history. They obviously had never studied the history of the Ottoman Empire. They didn't know who Saladin was. I mean, you know, they were wrong, but they really believed that, and you can find that in their writings. I mean, read the stuff in the Project for a New American Century, the letter to Bill Clinton that was signed by Jeb Bush and Feith and Wolfowitz and Pearl and Cheney and all these guys.
And apparently, they aren't aware that we've been propping up the most oppressive regimes in the region: Saudi Arabia, the Gulf States.
Well, of course, they know that, and I would submit to you that they would tell you that they're uncomfortable with that, and that this is the way to solve that problem.
You know, the earlier caller said the them out there are these Islamic crazies, but again, we're arming the craziest, most tyrannical aspects of the Wahhabis in Saudi Arabia and places like that.
Yeah.
You know, I think the them is really this military system we have. It's kind of, you know, we've become the Roman Empire in many ways, and I think the them is a lot closer to home. There's a person named Robert Spencer who gets on the media a lot. He wrote a book called Onward Muslim Soldier, and he likes to use terms like Islamofascists and dehumanize and caricature the resistance to our corporate empire.
Yeah, this is what Hitler did with the Jews in world, you know, in Germany. I mean, you dehumanize people by name calling them, frankly, by labeling them, by categorizing, by packaging, by framing them in negative ways. That and you have to use generalization. You have to use generalization. It's ultimately a destructive thing.
Even the Pentagon just recently put out a report that the Muslim people, they don't hate us, they don't hate our freedoms and all those.
Oh, that's nonsense.
You're right. They hate our bases and
you know,
the land.
You know, the best book on this, the best commentary on this that I have seen, Preston, was written by Pat Buchanan. I just finished about a month ago. I finished reading his book, Where the Right Went Wrong, and I got to say, other than the last chapter where he basically, you know, does this clarion call for Republican values or whatever you want to call it, I don't even know what to call it because it's so inconsistent with the rest of the book. I think that he felt like he had to slap it in there or he'd be thrown out of the Republican Party, but he lays out this argument. He calls Bush a liar. I mean, I'm not sure that he uses that word, but he talks about the lies of the Bush administration over and over and how destructive the policy of the Bush administration has been to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, forget about the rest of the world, which Pat Buchanan would love to do in a heartbeat, to the United States, how destructive the policies, the foreign policies of this administration is, how destructive the way that they're handling the world and war on terror is. And I do a book of the month for BuzzFlash.com, and I was half tempted. If it hadn't been for that last chapter in the book where Buchanan just went off on a partisan rant, I would have made that book the book of the month. And I never in my life thought that I would have been endorsing a Pat Buchanan book. I went, when we lived in Georgia a decade ago and he was running for president, we took our kids to hear him speak because I said, you know, I want you to, you know, if we lived in Germany, I would have wanted you to hear what Hitler had to say so you know what the enemy is like. And Buchanan gave this, just, he had this crowd and there was all these skinheads and stuff in the crowd and he had them so whipped up and he kept talking about them, those international bankers, and it was so clearly a thinly veiled anti-Semitic speech. It was shocking to me how much it was, and yet here he's written this pretty decent book. So anyhow, with all those caveats, I say that. Preston, I got to move along.
Sure,
thanks for the call and good point that you made. I do appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Brian in Grand Rapids, Michigan, on the line. Hey Brian, welcome to the program.
Hey Tom, how you doing, buddy?
I am great. What's up?
Two things. One, you mentioned the exit poll where 70% of the people who voted for Bush were convinced that Saddam was behind 9/11.
Yeah, in some way.
I got to weigh in on that.
Sure.
It's not that they were misinformed. They have to believe that, or it blows a hole in their theory of George Bush being a good guy.
You know, intentional self-delusion, but you've also got, you still to this day have commentators in Fox News trying to slip that in. You know, trying to imply that, trying to conflate those things, trying to bring those things together. You still have the Bush administration saying that the war in Iraq is part of the war on terror. Well, what did Iraq ever have to do with terrorism other than Saddam paying $20,000 to Hamas people who blew themselves up in Israel? Well, Saddam was not the only one who's supporting Hamas suicide bombers. There's people all over the Middle East doing that. That's not worth, I'm sorry, 1,000 of the lives of my countrymen.
Absolutely not. The other thing is, Tom, people like myself and that gentleman who called it earlier, the conservative gentleman, if we had the facts, the simple, plain facts put in front of us with the real nuts and bolts of what's going on in the world and our country, everybody would be able to see, but there is so much distortion, pollution, spin. What's going on? I can't barely get fair and balanced news other than listening to you and other programs. I'm just looking for the real facts without any bias, and let me make my own mind up. And
yeah, well,
that's a challenge in itself.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, Brian, but I just in the interest of full disclosure here, you're not going to get an unbiased view from me. I mean, my opinion of news is that news is always, there's always a filter on news, no matter what. It's impossible for there not to be a filter. It's absolutely impossible for there not to be a filter. And so, because we're human beings and we have to figure out a way to prioritize things. And, you know, what is a news story and what isn't? What are we going to report on today? What are we not going to report on today? And obviously, I'm going to be looking for the news stories that help me make my point. And I think that that's actually a good thing. That's how it used to be in America. For the first 200 years or so of this country, you'd buy a newspaper and you knew whether it was the Democratic or the Republican newspaper. You knew if it was the Socialist Workers newspaper or if it was John Rockefeller's newspaper or what's his name, the guy who has the castle out in William Randolph Hearst's newspaper. You knew what the bias was and you were able to get the news from these various different sources and hopefully filter out, you know, what's really going on out of all of this, because nobody is capable of giving the entire world to anybody as news. Say, here's everything that's going on absolutely without bias. And I think the biggest mistake that we have made as a society, and we've made it largely because the news has become so corporatized and so centralized, is to buy into the myth that there is such a thing as unbiased news. There isn't.
Thank you, Tom. It's always a pleasure.
Okay. Thanks, Brian, for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. And I didn't mean that to, like, say, you know, don't be naive or something. I don't think you're being naive at all, and I appreciate your kind words about me in the program. And I have my position. Rush Limbaugh has his position. We'll take the same news story and share it with you and give you a different perspective on it. And I think that that's a healthy thing for democracy. I think it's an important thing for democracy. Don in Illinois is on the line. Hey, Don, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, good to talk to you.
Thank you.
I don't want this to be pick on Tom Day.
Well, feel free. We've only got about a minute here, Don, before the music starts.
I'm not one of those radical conservatives, but you said something during the early part of this hour about Tim McVeigh.
Yeah.
That Tim McVeigh said that he bombed the Oklahoma building in the name of Jesus. And I think that's getting a little bit out of the lines. I don't think he ever said anything or even admitted he did it.
Well, to an extent, you're right. What was his name? There is a book out that let me deal with this when we come back from the break, because this music is going to stop in 10 seconds and then we're gone. But I will answer your question. You raise a good point.
I'll get off the line.
Okay, thanks a lot. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman program.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE. or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
An international group of scientists say amphibians around the world are in serious trouble. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. People have been talking for years about problems that are hitting frogs and other types of amphibians. A group of 500 scientists recently issued a report on the status of these animals after reviewing research from all corners of the globe. They say the outlook is grim. There are more than 5,700 different species of amphibians, and more than 1,800 of them are headed toward extinction. Simon Stewart directed the project, and he says the results were worse than he ever imagined.
When we started this process to do the global amphibian assessment 3.5 years ago, we never dreamt that the situation would be this bad. Not only is it bad with nearly a third of the species at risk of extinction in the world, but also there are a number of species that are deteriorating very rapidly. 435 species that are in very rapid decline around the world. So, yeah, it's unfortunately a very grim picture.
Stewart is a biologist who works for the International Union for Conservation of Nature. He says amphibians are particularly sensitive creatures. They have permeable skin, so they quickly suffer from exposure to chemicals in their surroundings. And Stewart says many species are adapted to small geographic areas. They can't just pick up and move if their habitat is destroyed or if the climate starts to change. The scientific report is called the Global Amphibian Assessment. A news release about it was issued in October, and Stewart says it drew a lot of attention. He says that's one small piece of good news.
The worldwide coverage of this story has just blown our minds, and the desire that people have to learn more about it suggests that more people care than we might think.
Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Is the Tom Hartman Program.
Sometimes it's bad.
Okay, here's the story on Tim McVeigh. Tim McVeigh read a book called The Turner Diaries, which is about how a group of dedicated white Christians, horrified by the darkening of America and the loss of Christianity in America, blew up a federal building in Oklahoma. And that caused white Christians across the country to rise up in arms against the government. Tim McVeigh, on April 4th, 2001, sent 3 pages of longhand notes to Gore Vidal, which Gore Vidal published in Vanity Fair, and he also published in the back end of a book of his, which I have and I've read, but I can't remember the title of. It's around here somewhere. And McVeigh says, quote, "I explain herein why I bombed the Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City. I explain this not for publicity, not seeking to win an argument over right or wrong. I explain it so that the record is clear as to my thinking and motivations in bombing a government installation." That's McVeigh. And he goes on to say, "I chose to bomb a federal building because such an action served more purposes than other options. Foremost, the bombing was a retaliatory strike." And he goes through this whole rant about the Waco incident and the government becoming more to the point where he says, where our government, like the Chinese, was deploying tanks against its own citizens. And that was his justification. He was living out the Turner Diaries. And you don't believe me, pick up the Turner Diary and read it, but don't pay for it. Don't buy it. Instead, go to the library and get it, because it's not, you don't want to give any more money to those very strange folks. Larry in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Larry, we've only got about 2 minutes left. I got a whole bunch of calls here, so
yeah,
we can make
it quick.
I'll make
it very quick. One thing to the Christian community, to George Bush's often repeated statement, they had a meeting with Billy Graham that changed his life. Billy Graham just recently said never happened. But the thing I want to say, Tom, why I respect you so much is that you bring facts and figures to the table, which I may not always agree with, but I know you do your research. And one thing I've noticed, again, with this gentleman that was calling earlier about W, is when you bring up facts, they just, I've noticed there's a tendency for them to just start laughing, and they don't bring anything to the table.
Other than
sometimes when you have people from, like, these different institutes that, you know, you have...
Where they have a good philosophical understanding, yeah. Well, Larry, I'm hopeful that that John will call again, and he will, or others, you know, folks who want to challenge me will do so on the issues. I look forward to that. Larry, thanks for the call. Tony in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Good. What's up? We got about 20 seconds here, Tony.
On behalf of that former caller, I'd just like to say that I believe Thomas Jefferson said that blind, unquestioning loyalty is the highest form of patriotism.
He did not.
That's why I said I believe. I don't need to know what I'm talking about.
I see. Theodore Roosevelt said that that questioning the president of the United States, and he said this after he had been president when he was in the Bull Moose Party and running for the president, he said that questioning the president of the United States was the highest form of patriotism. So I'll give you that. That's close. How's that, Tony? Thanks a lot.
Bernie Sanders, good job in Outfox for me tomorrow.
I'll do it. Thanks a lot, Tony, for the call. I appreciate it. And, Rick, I'm sorry we can't get to your call. We do have another hour of the program, though, so we will be back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, Transforming the World by Revitalizing Democracy.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Jesse Russell. The National Labor Relations Board will hear a case today concerning Walmart auto shop workers who have expressed interest in forming a union. 9 of 17 workers at the Walmart Supercenter Tire and Lube Express in Loveland, Colorado, submitted cards to the board. The attempt at organizing a small part of the store indicates a new strategy by the United Food and Commercial Workers in getting through the anti-union barricade of the world's largest retail chain. The union insists that the auto shop is separate from the rest of the store and can therefore organize. When meat cutters at a Walmart store in Texas won union certification in 2000, the company reacted by closing all of its meat cutting departments countrywide. The only officially unionized Walmart is in Quebec, a store that the chain has since threatened to close. In addition, the store recently bowed to pressure in China to allow the Communist Party-sponsored union into stores in that country.
Picket lines continue in Hannibal, Ohio, despite 17 arrests as aluminum manufacturer Ormet files for bankruptcy. The company is seeking to void labor contracts held by the United Steelworkers of America.
Right now we're in a fight for health care and pensions. You know, it's going on across the country. Every company you hear, you know, they want them to pay for their health care. They want them to pay, lose their pensions. They're trying to take our pensions and health care from our retirees.
Jeremy Parker is the vice president of Ohio USWA Local 5724, representing half of the 1,300 union workers at the Ormet Reduction Plant and Rolling Mill.
Now, this is a fight that's not only going on right here at Ormet. It's nationwide. Every time you open the paper, somebody's taking a pension. You know, we're just standing up to them and saying, listen, if you don't want to pay us what we've worth and what our retirees have worked their lifetime for, then there's not going to be an Ormet. You know, I'd rather see that place turn back to cornfields than to live under them conditions.
Working without a contract since August 30th, Ormet employees decided to conduct a work stoppage on November 22nd. The union is waiting to hear from a bankruptcy court judge on plans for reorganization.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. If you're offered the option of working the night shift, you may want to think twice about taking it unless you're married. More than 99 million Americans work the night shift, and a recent study finds that married workers handle it better both emotionally and psychologically. Mark Nagy, head of industrial and organizational psychology at Xavier University in Cincinnati, says that night hours help parents handle things like childcare more efficiently. Single night shift workers tend to feel left out of the mainstream.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Who was one of the biggest winners on November 2nd? Some bloke named Jerry Jones. He ran a $5 million ad blitz in Arlington, Texas, to win a vote that will put $325 million of government money into his own pocket. Jerry's the billionaire owner of the Dallas Cowboys, and the vote was to get taxpayers to build a luxury sports palace for his private business. He's just one of the billionaire sports owners across America who profess to love free enterprise, but shamelessly wallow in corporate welfare. Local politicians, eager to please these moneyed power brokers, back their billionaire boondoggles, even as basic needs in their cities go begging. Take New York City, where both Mayor Michael Bloomberg and Governor George Pataki have rushed to the aid of Robert Wood Johnson IV, known as Woody to his pals and political cronies. Woody is the heir to the Johnson & Johnson fortune, a backer of various far-right-wing causes, one of the top Republican donors in the country, and owner of the New York Jets. It's in this latter capacity that Woody, a fervent free enterpriser, wants a government handout. He says his team must have a new stadium to play in, and both Bloomberg and Pataki are there for him. They're offering $600 million from New York taxpayers to build poor Woody a privileged for-profit playground on a stretch of Manhattan's most valuable land. These are the same two political leaders who keep shortchanging New York school kids, claiming there's just no money to meet their needs. 94% of the city's schools have no athletic fields, and more than half have no playgrounds for the kids. Forget playgrounds. The kids' schools are dangerously dilapidated. Parents and teachers have to chip in to buy the most basic classroom supplies, and some school bathrooms don't even have toilet paper. This is Jim Hightower saying, here's a modest proposal. Not another dime in welfare for billionaires until every school is fully stocked with toilet paper.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-947-AUTO.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec? Nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. The British Embassy starting to freak out here. They're starting to get very worried. This is something we should take very seriously. Disintegrating, this by Patrick Cockburn in Baghdad. This is published in The Independent in the UK. This is, the press in the United Kingdom is far less consolidated, far less corporatized, and far more willing to simply speak out or take on or challenge or whatever as than the press is here in the United States. One of the big problems that we have with the media in the United States is that the big news organizations have to have access to the White House or they can't survive. They just, you know, they go out of business. And this is why there was this little story that appeared in December, I believe it was like the first week of December of the year 2000, right after the election of 2000, after it was all decided in Florida and the Supreme Court and everything. This little news story, and I wish I'd clipped it out because it appeared and then it vanished, and it's in some AP archive someplace, and if one of my listeners or one of the folks in the chat room can ever find that thing, I would be so grateful. But anyhow, there's this little story about how one of the vice presidents of CNN was making a pilgrimage to Washington, D.C. to reassure the White House and Karl Rove and George W. Bush that they would be, that their coverage of him in the future would be positive. And the reason, of course, was because they were afraid that that Bush would do to them what he did to Helen Thomas, which ultimately cost her her job. And that is refuse to call on them, refuse to take their questions, refuse to give them interviews. You do that, I mean, if the administration does that, you're out of the news business. You have no access to the news source. So the media in the United States, and the higher up you go and the bigger it gets and the more expensive it is, the more this is a problem. The media in the United States is scared to death of this administration because this administration will play hardball with them. They will not talk to people who challenge them. They will not allow people to ask them hard questions. Not more than once, anyway. And if you're a reporter who's got the White House beat, you know, the John King at CNN or whoever the guys are on the various networks, if you're that person, and these people make good money. I mean, they make anywhere from $500,000 to $1.5 million a year. And you know that kind of income, that your job depends on having the president call on you when there's a press conference, you are not going to do anything to upset him. Just that simple. So the news coverage in the United States tends to be very, very, very white bread, very milk toast, very mealy mouth or whatever you want to call it. I don't know. It is not particularly fair and not particularly balanced, but it is what it is. But in the UK, they really don't care whether George Bush likes them or not, the media in the UK. And interestingly, they don't so much care if Tony Blair likes them or not. If you've ever watched on C-SPAN, Prime Minister's Questions, this is just an amazing thing to watch. Once a week, Tony Blair has to sit there in the House of Commons, which is like our House of Representatives, and for two hours, has to put up with just an absolutely intense and often abusive grilling. Where and if he says something they don't like, they all go, and you hear the whole room going, and it's just absolutely remarkable. We should pass a law requiring our president to submit to president's questions with the House of Representatives, you know, once a month at least. But anyhow, getting back to the British press, here we have
this story in the Independent, which is Independent. Embassy sounds alarm over growing dangers in Iraq. And here you get a glimpse of what's really going on. And it's a rather disquieting glimpse. This is a story sans spin, a story without spins. Disintegrating security in Baghdad was underlined in a somber warning yesterday from the British embassy against using the airport road or taking a plane out of Iraq. The embassy says a bomb was discovered on a flight inside Iraq on November 22nd. It shows that insurgents have been able to penetrate the stringent security at Baghdad airport. The embassy says its own staff have been advised against taking commercial planes. The warning is in sharp contrast to more optimistic statements from U.S. military commanders after the capture of Fallujah, in which they had spoken of, quote, breaking the back of the insurgency, end quote. The airport road, this is the road from Baghdad out to the airport, is littered with evidence of previous attacks, the twisted cars used by suicide bombers and craters from roadside bombs. There are, writes Patrick Cockburn, there are no safe havens. Since March, 14 British civilians have been killed. Not only have insurgents proven capable of putting a bomb on a plane, but on 14 October, two suicide bombers entered the heavily fortified Green Zone and blew themselves up, killing five people and injuring many more. Danger levels in the capital are also increasing. Some of the resistance fighters who were previously in Fallujah have taken refuge in Baghdad. They may wish to launch spectacular attacks to offset the fall of Fallujah, which had been the de facto capital of the insurgents. And then he goes on to talk about how one of the big problems that the British are having and the Americans are having in Iraq is trying to field an Iraqi military, an Iraqi police force, an Iraqi military force, and how many of the people who are working for the Iraqi government, who are in the Iraqi military and the Iraq police force, can't even tell their families what they do for a living. But there is such widespread poverty leading to hunger. I mean, the social safety net of the country has just been ripped apart. We have neoconized Iraq. We put in a flat income tax of 15%. We allow corporations to take all of their profits out of the country so they don't have to reinvest anything in the nation. We completely opened the borders to free trade. So suddenly, all of the Iraqi industries that were relatively uncompetitive, you know, they didn't have 6 months to make the transition. It was overnight. They've gone out of business. And all these imported goods from China and whatnot are showing up in there. And people are, you know, poverty has exploded. Childhood illness and malnutrition has exploded. Disease has exploded. Not to mention the violence. But, I mean, this is people are joining the Iraqi army and police force not because they believe in the Iraqi government or in the cause, which is a tragedy, but because they're desperate for the money. And so they can't even tell their family what they're doing. They hide their uniforms. They go to work by circuitous routes. And still, the insurgents who view themselves as independence fighters, as patriots, most of them, are tracking these people down and killing them as traitors to their nation. The civil war has begun. It began several months ago in Iraq. And, you know, we keep denying it. We keep pretending it's not there, but it's there. And this is a serious, serious problem. Well, let's have a Greenwatch alert here. BushGreenwatch.org. Federal Food and Drug Administration tests released this week have confirmed the presence of perchlorate. You don't know what perchlorate is? It's rocket fuel. It causes cancer. And liver damage and other things. Confirmed the presence of perchlorate, an explosive additive in solid rocket fuel, in almost every sample of lettuce and milk taken in a nationwide investigation. Perchlorate leaking from military bases and defense contractor facilities is known to cause regional water pollution, resulting in serious health effects.
The FDA investigation found the toxic additive in 217 of 232 samples of lettuce and milk in 15 states, including places not previously known for perchloric contamination. I'm going to tell you the reason for this, by and large, with the lettuce. Anyway, I can tell you the lettuce reason is because most states don't grow lettuce. Most of the lettuce consumed in the United States is grown in California, and the California water supply, much of the California water supply, the Central California Aquifer, has apparently been contaminated with perchlorate. Bill Walker, the West Coast Vice President of Environmental Working Group, said, "This is surprising new evidence that rocket fuel is getting into the food supply in places we never would have suspected. It means that perchlorate exposure is not just a problem in areas where the drinking water is contaminated, but a concern for everyone every time we visit the grocery store. Problems associated with perchlorate include impaired thyroid function." You know anybody who's having to take thyroid medication? Tumors, cancer, decreased learning capacity, and developmental problems such as loss of hearing and speech in children. Bush Greenwatch reported last December of the stalling tactics of the Bush administration and the Defense Department regarding a national standard for safe drinking water. They're stonewalling, basically, on perchlorate. It's a problem, but we're not going to. So our Bush Greenwatch for the day. The United Nations delivers a rebuke to the White House. This is an interesting juxtaposition. On right-wing talk radio across America, you will hear people ranting about Kofi Annan. And really what they're ranting about is the UN. And there have been conservatives for a long, long time who have felt that the United Nations is not a world body that operates in the best interest of the United States. And, in fact, the UN mandate is not to act in the best interest of the United States. It's not to act in the best interest of any nation. The United Nations grew out of the League of Nations, which grew out of World War I. The United Nations came about after World War II. And the purpose of the United Nations is to ensure world peace. That's what it's all about. It's like the Department of Peace. That's their mission. Their mission is to keep people from dying in unnecessary wars. Now, the United Nations does have the authority to declare wars or to authorize wars. And, in fact, had weapons of mass destruction been found in Iraq, had Hans Blix and Mohammed al-Baradei found any evidence whatsoever that Saddam Hussein represented a threat to the United States, to Europe, or even to any of his Arab neighbors, the UN may well have authorized us to attack him. But there was no evidence. The inspectors kept saying, "We can't find any evidence. Give us another 2 or 3 months. We'll prove to you that there's no evidence." And so Bush, at that point, was confronted with the fact that if he waited another 2 or 3 months, there would have been no way he could attack Iraq. And so he went in without UN authorization. Well, anyhow, Kofi Annan has become the whipping boy for these people who are unhappy that the UN is there. And there's a flip side of the story, too. Let me get to that right after this. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
No, no, you may not hang at the park. Yes, even if all your friends are there. Go to Mrs. Feldman's till I'm home from work.
Keeping tabs on your kid after school isn't easy.
Yes, tomorrow too.
But if you don't, she's more likely to do drugs.
No, I am not easier on your brother.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All of the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Iraq is the front in the war against terror. Might be because we invited a mayor. Perhaps there's some terrible clerical error. Maybe a faulty equation, like 911 equals U.S. invasion.
And welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour, 24 and a half, actually, to be absolutely accurate. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, what's on your mind?
How are you today, Tom?
I'm great. What's up?
A lot of calls from GR. You probably should start a fan club here.
Well, I think that what happened in the last hour was that that fellow from Grand Rapids called up calling me names, and
right.
Everybody decided to defend the honor of the city.
And I'll do that, too, although we did vote for Kerry. There's a lot of conservatives in this area. It's considered a pretty Calvinistic, you know, Dutch Calvinistic area, but actually Kerry and Gore last time actually won the city. But
yeah.
What I wanted to talk about was the gentleman, I guess his name was John, he was a conservative and he couldn't understand liberals.
Right.
I have the opposite problem. I don't understand how people can look at this guy, George Bush Jr., who is arguably the most incompetent and most corrupt president we've ever had. Now, you mentioned the Kevin Phillips book.
Yeah.
There was the Kitty Kelly book.
Oh.
I'll throw another out there, a couple of others out there. One by a man named Anton Chaykin. It's called The Unauthorized Biography of George Bush. This is George Bush Sr. Now,
yeah.
This man is affiliated with Linda LaRouche. You might say, well, LaRouche is kind of a crackpot. Then there's another book called The Establishment's Man. It's a paperback. put out by folks affiliated with the John Birch Society. And you might say, well, there again, they're kind of kooky. But the point is, neither one of those two organizations are what you would call liberal Democrats.
No, you're going to find people on the extremes, both left and right, who will always be challenging whoever's president of the United States.
Well, that's true. Just, but then you mentioned Pat Buchanan, who seems kind of schizophrenic right now because he seems to be calling Bush or the administration corrupt and incompetent, and yet he wants to say nice things, and he actually endorsed Bush in his magazine. But the point is, there are people all over the spectrum who will look at the Bush administration who are honest and can see that we've alienated a lot of the world. We've got into a phony, immoral, illegal war. Our economy is going down the tubes. I mean, you know, and if you really are a Christian and you think George Bush is going to make this country and the world a better place, that's also misplaced loyalty, because as a Christian, there's only one man you should be putting your faith in, and it's not George W. Bush.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't understand conservatives. I guess I have the opposite problem of John.
Well, yeah. And you know, and again, there's that issue of painting people with a brush or you know, overgeneralizing. I think that there are some very legitimate worldview issues that are part of the conservative worldview. I mean, historically, if you go back and read The Conservative Mind by Russell Kirk, he in 1953 published this book, and it became the classic. It was what inspired William F. Buckley, it inspired Barry Goldwater, it inspired the whole pre-Reagan conservative movement before the neocons came along.
Even Reagan wasn't half bad compared to these folks.
Well, in some ways, yeah. But when you read it, what you get is that these guys are classic conservatives in the mold of John Adams and Edmund Burke. That is to say, they don't believe in democracy. They believe that there really should be a ruling aristocracy. Where they differ from classical aristocracies is the classical aristocracies are hereditary, and you can get, you know, any old idiot as king, just if he happens to be the son of the previous king, right?
Which we've done.
Well, no, I'm not trying to draw parallels. I'm really not. But what these guys say is we should instead have meritocracies, where the person who's really the smartest should run everything. What it all boils down to in all cases is this basic distrust of we the people, this assumption that if you just let the people have the power, they will screw things up.
So isn't that elitist?
It is. It's very elitist, but it's also traditional conservative. And any honest conservative will acknowledge that is the foundation of conservative philosophy. And the foundation of liberal philosophy was put out by Thomas Jefferson, where he said, I don't look to the rich for the salvation of this nation. I look to the people. And the belief that the people will screw up, but it will regulate itself very quickly, because when the people make a mistake, they suffer the consequences and they fix it. And so that's the main divide between conservative and liberal. However you want to, you know, I mean, there's a million other ways to split it up, but that's the main divide. And once you understand that, then a lot of other things make sense. A whole lot of other things start to make sense.
Well, keep up the good work, Tom.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks for the call. It's good to hear from you. I appreciate it, and I appreciate your kind words. 29 minutes past the hour, the Tom Hartman program with you. Talk radio for the rest of us.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Jesse Russell. The National Labor Relations Board will hear a case today concerning Walmart auto shop workers who have expressed interest in forming a union. 9 of 17 workers at the Walmart Supercenter Tire and Lube Express in Loveland, Colorado, submitted cards to the board. The attempt at organizing a small part of the store indicates a new strategy by the United Food and Commercial Workers in getting through the anti-union barricade of the world's largest retail chain. The union insists that the auto shop is separate from the rest of the store and can therefore organize. When meat cutters at a Walmart store in Texas won union certification in 2000, the company reacted by closing all of its meat cutting departments countrywide. The only officially unionized Walmart is in Quebec, a store that the chain has since threatened to close. In addition, the store recently bowed to pressure in China to allow the Communist Party-sponsored union into stores in that country.
Picket lines continue in Hannibal, Ohio, despite 17 arrests as aluminum manufacturer Ormet files for bankruptcy. The company is seeking to void labor contracts held by the United Steelworkers of America.
Right now we're in a fight for health care and pensions. You know, it's going on across the country. Every company you hear, you know, they want them to pay for their health care. They want us to pay, lose their pensions. They're trying to take our pensions and health care from our retirees.
Jeremy Parker is the vice president of Ohio USWA Local 5724, representing half of the 1,300 union workers at the Ormet Reduction Plant and Rolling Mill.
Now, this is a fight that's not only going on right here at Ormet. It's nationwide. Every time you open the paper, somebody's taking a pension. You know, we're just standing up to them and saying, listen, if you don't want to pay us what we've worth and what our retirees have worked their lifetime for, then there's not going to be an Ormet. You know, I'd rather see that place turn back to cornfields than to live under them conditions.
Working without a contract since August 30th, Ormet employees decided to conduct a work stoppage on November 22nd. The union is waiting to hear from a bankruptcy court judge on plans for reorganization.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. If you're offered the option of working the night shift, you may want to think twice about taking it unless you're married. More than 99 million Americans work the night shift, and a recent study finds that married workers handle it better both emotionally and psychologically. Mark Nagy, head of industrial and organizational psychology at Xavier University in Cincinnati, says that night hours help parents handle things like childcare more efficiently. Single night shift workers tend to feel left out of the mainstream.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Round here.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. The UN delivers a rebuke to the White House. To get back to that, I just wanted to wrap this thing up about Kofi Annan and the UN and all this stuff. The United Nations put together a panel of wise men, right, a 16-member panel that was organized by the UN to try and clean up the UN's relationship with the United States. I mean, that wasn't the official reason that was put out, but to quote the Times of London, the 16-member panel set up last year to try and mend rifts over Iraq, although it deliberately makes no reference to that conflict, outlines a new vision for collective security in an era of globe-trotting terrorist groups who can lay their hands on nuclear, chemical, or biological weapons. And basically what this group did is they came out with this report in which they said, on the one hand, the world is, in some ways, a different place than it was some, you know, 5, 10, 15 years ago. That is to say, see, this is kind of a subtle way of saying, or a concealed way of saying, really, that the first world is now confronting the problems that the third world has been dealing with forever. And this, you know, nobody wants to quite say it that way, but people did not feel secure and safe in Algeria or Egypt or Morocco or the Sudan, or you know, the list just goes on and on. Forever, pretty much, whereas they did in Western Europe, the United States, Australia, Japan. And now, Western Europe, Australia, the United States, and Japan Japan probably to a very small extent, but the rest of us, as it were, are starting to feel kind of a little neurotically insecure because these 19 guys with box cutters took down two of the tallest building, the two tallest buildings in the United States. And so the UN, this UN panel says, well, you know, there is, things have changed, and there is a risk here. And this needs to be acknowledged by the United Nations in when we come up with and when we lay out guidelines for when we will approve a country going to war. In other words, preemptive war may be allowable under some circumstances, but only if you can demonstrate that there is a real threat that you are actually preempting. Now, you know, frankly, I don't see why they had to say this, because this has been the policy of the UN since, I mean, the League of Nations. This was the policy of the League of Nations. So it's not, this isn't like some, you know, new epiphany that somebody had last week. This has been around, this is an old idea. But then the other thing that they said is that no nation, and again, this is something that has been said since World War II. I mean, this is what came out of the Nuremberg trials, that no nation has the right to attack another nation that doesn't directly threaten it. That is considered an illegal act of war, and the nation that does it is acting outside of international norms and standards and law, and the leaders of that nation who allow or sanction or authorize that attack are war criminals. So the UN says, you know, comes up with this statement. The panel lays down guidelines for the Security Council to decide on preventative action. It says that it should take into account the seriousness of the threat, whether the force used is proportional, whether it comes as a last resort, if it is intended to address the threat rather than some other purpose, and that it has a reasonable chance of success. It calls for the five criteria to be adopted in 9 non-binding resolutions by the Security Council and the General Assembly of all 191 member states. And this is going to be laid out by the Secretary General way off in the distance, next September. UN moves slowly. And the White House did not take this well. The White House was not pleased that the UN would say a nation shouldn't have the right to strike another nation if it's not being threatened by them. And I don't get it. We should be absolutely embracing this. We should say, you know, you're right. And we made a mistake with Iraq. There were no weapons of mass destruction there. They did not represent a threat to us. They did not represent a threat to our neighbors. They were behaving obnoxiously. Saddam Hussein was maybe half as bad a dictator as the king of Saudi Arabia, but he was a bad dictator. Or Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe. He was one-tenth as bad as Mugabe, but he was a bad guy. Or what's-his-name in Burma, Myanmar. But he was a bad guy, and there needs to be some way of dealing with bad guys. Well, we had that. It was the sanctions and all this stuff. And we need to clean that up and strengthen it and make it work right. But what we need to say is, you know, you're right, we blew it. We shouldn't have attacked a country that didn't represent a threat to us. We should have waited another 3 months for the weapons inspectors to finish their work. Now, of course, what the Bush administration will not say is that in the summer of 2002, with the midterm elections coming up and the Republicans hoping to recapture control of the Senate and strengthen their control of the House and begin the reelection campaign for George W. Bush, Karl Rove flew down to Texas and laid out with a PowerPoint demonstration for George W. how, you know, what his campaign was going to be based on: strong, steady leadership in a time of war. And that to have leadership in a time of war, you got to have a war. That the war in Iraq was the centerpiece of George W. Bush's reelection campaign strategy. And they expected it to go better than it did. I really think that when George declared mission accomplished on that aircraft carrier, he thought mission was accomplished. These guys were just so naive. And it was a brilliant reelection strategy. You know, no president of the United States during time of war has ever failed to get reelected. It's, you know, you just, I mean, no country wants to change presidents when there's a war going on. just doesn't happen. Roosevelt got, you know, I guess there wasn't a war going on through most of his re-elections, but nonetheless, you get my point. Lincoln was re-elected, and on it goes. So we're not going to say that, although Bob Woodward has in his book about Bush. But, you know, we don't need to say that. I don't think that it's necessary for the nation to confess to the crimes of the Bush administration. You've got now, both in Canada and Germany, war crimes prosecutions against George W. Bush going on. I mean, this stuff is coming out. The world knows this stuff. It's not a secret. And we have to deal with it. We're dealing with the consequences of it. I mean, it's the $1 billion every couple of days, $1 billion a week, more than a billion, almost $2 billion a week that we're spending is money that means that we can't have health care in the United States. We can't rebuild our schools. We can't repair our roads. We can't fix our air traffic system. We can't protect our ports. Or at least we can't without raising taxes on the rich, which Bush is unwilling to do. And so we're suffering the consequences of it. It's not like this is a victimless crime. Yes, the Iraqis are suffering the consequences of it, too. I mean, seriously. Oh, a terrible, terrible thing. But we should just say, you know, we blew it. And we agree with this UN proposal that preemptive war, if you can't prove a threat, is a war crime and the leaders of the nation can be prosecuted. And the reason why we should go along with that is because there are countries that may attack us, to whom we represent no threat. And we must have a legal, internationally sanctioned and agreed upon mechanism by which we can say, you know, they had no right to do that. We need to take them out. There are countries that are going to attack other countries, not just us, but other countries. But, I mean, just totally in the self-interest of the United States. I mean, this is why, after all, we sign these things. The day before yesterday, Limbaugh was whining on his radio program about how the International Committee for the Red Cross had gone down to Guantanamo Bay, and they said there's torture going on there. It's illegal what's going on. Some of the things that are going on in Gitmo are illegal. And Limbaugh and all these cons, they're whining about this. Well, there's poor. Why don't they tell us how terrible Saddam was? Well, actually, they did. The Red Cross issues reports every year on repressive regimes all over the world. And when these guys go on their high horse and start talking about how the Red Cross is singling us out, they're just lying or misinformed. And the fact of the matter is the Red Cross visits people, including Americans, in over 100 countries around the world every year. People being held in prison, people being held in incommunicado. I mean, it's a really significant effort that the Red Cross makes. And we should be supporting that because we want the Red Cross to visit our people. There are Americans being held in foreign prisons. There are Americans who are prisoners of war in foreign places, not just in Iraq. And we want the Red Cross to be able to take a letter from a mother to a son and to document the conditions of what's going on so that international pressure can be brought to bear. We want that to happen. We should be aggressively and enthusiastically supporting this. And if the Red Cross says something we don't like about what's going on at Guantanamo, we should change what's going on at Guantanamo because we are the example for the world. We hold ourselves up as the example for the world. And if our example is a poorly set example, what's the world going to do? I mean, you're going to see more. I mean, here you have Vladimir Putin now suggesting that, you know, his invasion of Chechnya is the same thing as our invasion of Iraq. You've got countries now suggesting that the Bush Doctrine. You got China talking about Taiwan, that the Bush Doctrine of preemptive war is something that they can use too. And that the Red Cross shouldn't be coming into their country and looking in their jails, because we don't want them to come in and look at Guantanamo. We have been the moral compass for the world for a long, long, long time, and we must continue to be the moral compass for the world. And we are failing at that right now. And it's not just a tragedy because it's the wrong thing. It's a tragedy because it will come back to haunt us. It's our soldiers, our tourists, our business people in foreign countries who get charged with crimes unfairly or inappropriately, or who are, because of their political activity or their religious beliefs, get thrown into jail, and who we need the intervention of the International Red Cross. It's our nation that has been, our interests around the world that have been attacked, and we need world support. We can't do it alone. We can't do it alone. We live in a community of the world. And I think, you know, folks are starting to get this. At the UN, UN staff, diplomats, and African nations rallied on Wednesday to the defense of UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, wounded by U.S. allegations of corruption in the now-defunct Iraq Oil for Food program. A U.S. official in Washington said the administration did not believe Annan should resign over the scandal, but that the administration was reluctant to strongly defend him because there was some irritation with Annan over Iraq. See, that's what it's really about. It's got nothing to do with Kofi Annan's son. Kofi Annan's son did not make as much money on the oil for food program as Halliburton did. It's not about his son. It's about the Bush administration wanting to whip people into line and say, if you're not with us, you're against us, and if you're against us, we're going to crush you. But Spain's UN ambassador told reporters the group had mentioned unfair and unwarranted attacks against Annan, who is, quote, an inspiration to us all. Some 3,000 UN staff have signed a letter saying many of the accusations against the world body were made without full knowledge of the facts. These accusations being made by right-wing commentators in the United States. More than ever, we support the Secretary General in his balanced, fair, and substantive approach, the letter said. And then you got, you know, Norm Coleman, who clearly just doesn't get it, calling on Annan to resign before there's been any trial, any release of information, anything. Come on, Norm. We're all Americans here. We want this country to work. We want what's best for our nation. This isn't about making the Republican Party or George W. Bush look good, and therefore, and in the process, taking down the United Nations. It can't be about that. If it becomes about that, we have just shot ourselves in the foot hugely. It's time for the cons to take a good long breath and sit down and relax and say, okay, you know, if there's some wrongdoing in the All for Food program, let's get to the bottom of it and let's prosecute the people involved. But let's not turn it into political hysterics and stunts. It's not good for America. Sean in Indianapolis on the line. Hey, Sean, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, what's going on? I haven't had much of a chance to listen to you this week, so I was wondering, what's your take on why we're not doing the same thing that the Ukraine is doing? And another part of the question is, what can we do between now and 2006?
Okay, Sean, I'll answer both of those right after this break. Thanks for the great question, and we'll be right back with that. It's 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is E-C-O-W-I-N-E. Au revoir.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots, organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a WIN feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. Picket lines continue in Hannibal, Ohio, despite 17 arrests as aluminum manufacturer Ormit filed for bankruptcy and is seeking to void the steelworkers' labor agreements and impose new ones.
Right now we're in a fight for health care and pensions. You know, it's going on across the country. Every company you hear, you know, they want them to pay for their health care. They want them to pay, lose their pensions. They're trying to take our pensions and health care from our retirees.
Jeremy Parker is the vice president of Ohio USWA Local 5724, representing half of the 1,300 union workers at the reduction plant and rolling mill.
Now, this is a fight that's not only going on right here at Ormet. It's nationwide. Every time you open a paper, somebody's taking a pension. You know, we're just standing up to them and saying, listen, if you don't want to pay us what we're worth and what our retirees have worked their lifetime for, then there's not going to be an Ormet.
Working without a contract since August 30th, Ormet employees decided to conduct a work stoppage November 22nd.
The company has took their secretarial staff, their, you know, administrative staff down into the plant. They have been doing the jobs that, you know, we left, which includes, you know, part room utility work, setting carbon. We're told that they're on a 12-hour shift in there, and then they're, once they get done with that shift, they go back on the hill, do their duties there, and then sleep somewhere in between. There's like 300 of them trying to, you know, do a jobs that 1,300 of us was in there doing.
Parker says Ormet's closure would do irreparable damage to Monroe County, where it's the largest tax contributor and the largest employer.
If them plants go down, you know, Monroe County turns into a dust bowl. You know, there's not a lot of other industrial in this county. You've got a lot of little businesses. You know, these mom-and-pop stores, they depend on us every day. You know, we are their customers.
The union is waiting to hear from a bankruptcy court judge on her plans for reorganization. With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Working in a coal mine, going on down. Now working in a coal mine, about to slip down. Working in a coal mine, going on down.
And welcome
back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Tom Hartman, the website, tomhartman.com, the website. And in answer to your question, Sean, and thank you for the call, good question. Why isn't there an uprising in America like there was in the Ukraine? And first of all, there are many folks in the United States, I would say probably the vast majority of Americans, who believe that there is no reason for there to be an uprising in the United States because they think that the election was just, everything was just fine. And that's why there's no uprising. And what it gets to is the issue of when and where and how publicity happens. What happened in the Ukraine was there was a group of students from Serbia who had organized this campaign to help overthrow Milosevic. And they have hired themselves out as hired guns to the U.S. State Department, the Agency for International Development, and groups funded by the Republican and Democratic parties to challenge elections in three other former Soviet Union nations. They've done it in Belarus, they've done it in the nation of Georgia, and now they've done it in Ukraine. And what they do is they organize exit polls, and even before Election Day, they come up with a slogan. In the Ukraine, it was, he's out. In Serbia, it was, he's out. In the Ukraine, it was, time's up. They come up with a logo. In Serbia, it was a fist, black and white fist. So that, you know, just a very simple one-color logo so that you can make a stencil out of it and you can spray paint it on sidewalks and things, building sides and mailboxes and whatnot. In the Ukraine, the logo, the symbol was a ticking clock. And then the day of the election, within minutes of the polls closing, before the government, in each one of these cases, a corrupt government that had rigged the elections by making it hard for people to vote for the opponent and easier, and you know, just like they did in Ohio, they release the exit poll results showing who won. And if the exit poll results in three of these four countries show that the opposition won, then they mobilize mass demonstrations and they do a huge internet campaign because they don't have access to the media. The media is all ready to say, oh, the government in power continues to be in power, right? But they go around that by doing that. And that's what they've done now in four former Soviet states. And it's why Vlad Putin is just foaming at the mouth. He's very upset about this. And that wasn't done in the United States. Instead, the opposite was done. The Republican Party came out with statements within minutes of the closing of the polls saying everything was fair, everything was free, everything worked fine, wasn't wonderful. And that became the official story, and that's why you don't have protests in the streets, Sean, in answer to your question. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today, to Ira for engineering it, to Brad for our music, to the folks in our chat room, to Shelby and Ben and Mike, and thanks to you for listening. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise.